Good morning. We'll call our council budget workshop briefing to order. Ms. Hill, Pastor Hill, could you lead us in an invocation, please?
All right.
He is God of our silent tears, God, who has brought us thus far on the way. Once again, God, we pause before your awesome and magnificent presence to praise you and to thank you. God, we praise you because you're God, and we thank you because you've brought us this far on the way, and you have allowed us to be leaders of this city. God, as we come together now to discuss the business of the city, I ask that you pour out your spirit upon us. And Lord, even where we disagree, allow us to do so in a manner that is pleasing to you. But Lord, I also want to ask you to touch personally each person in this room and under the sound of my voice. God, as human beings, our most common thread is our suffering. And so, God, I lift to you any suffering of any person in this room. Business, family, children, grandchildren, finances, leadership of this city, God, I lift them to you and ask you to strengthen each and every one of us in our weakest places and use us to your glory and honor. This is our prayer. Amen.
Mr. Cadet, could you lead us in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We have two briefings this morning on the parks and recreation and on the streets. Then we also have the discussion on the property tax, which is a legal discussion. And Mr. Cook, I'll turn it to you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Good morning, members of the council. I'll go right to the point on the first briefing. If you would go to slide 12, I think there's a lot of good background information on all the legal requirements and options, but slide 12, I think, says it all that's most relevant. The tax rate that's been recommended in the manager's proposed budget is 74.79 cents. If the council wishes to, later in September, adopt that tax rate, there is no action necessary on today's agenda. There's no public hearings that need to be called on the tax rate. You have a public hearing Wednesday on the budget. That's already set and scheduled. There could be two additional public hearings specific to the tax rate. That's the decision that needs to be made today. Again, if you want to adopt the manager's recommended budget of 74.79 cents, no action is necessary. There is actually room to raise the tax rate some and still have no action today, but if the council wants to reserve the option to raise a tax rate, set a tax rate higher than 79.37 cents, that's 4.58 cents higher than what's recommended, 4.58 cents higher than what's recommended. If the council would want to leave the option open to go higher than that, there needs to be a vote today specific and set a maximum possible rate, and call in those public hearings to move forward. But again, there's, in essence, the manager's recommendation or 4.58 cents capacity to go higher, no action necessary today.
Well said. Mr. Atkins, do you want to say something? What? He's finished. Okay. Dave.
Yes.
Thank you, Mayor. A couple questions, Dave. Number one, you said the 74... The rate now is
74.79 cents is current rate and recommended rate.
And if we increase that to 79.34, that would be a 4.4
4.58%, right?
If it were to be raised to 79.37 cents, that would be 4.58 cents higher.
Right.
Not percent, but cents.
Okay, cents. But that would give us a increase of what, about $38
million? $38.5 million, yes.
Okay. If we do the $38.5 million, and since the city manager already did the budget, where would the $38 million go to? Can that money be earmarked? Do they got to go to a separate line item? How do
that's totally up to the council. So
if that was
done, then the council would have to put that in and build that into the budget. So,
therefore, you will come back to us and say, how do we use the 38.5, right?
No, the manager's recommended a budget that does not have a tax rate increase.
I know, but if it
the answer is yes. The answer is yes.
Yes, the answer is yes. Okay. Now, again, if you do the $38 million increase, now you have two different debt. You would have the general fund and you have the debt service.
The tax rate is split into two components.
Okay,
yes,
now,
sir.
How would a $38 million go to the general fund, or would it use to part of the debt service?
Unless you were to change the debt plan, the note and bond issuance plan, there'd be no need to adjust the debt rate. It could all go to the general fund.
The debt service for all practical purposes, Dave said.
Pretty well fixed.
So we're servicing that.
Excuse me, Mary. Do we have to increase anything on the debt service? You know, do you see that the $38 million will go towards the debt service?
It doesn't have to, no.
You said it doesn't have to, but it can.
It could.
It's a possibility, right?
Yes, sir.
If you wanted to sell the bonds earlier or do the notes that are planned earlier, it might require some adjustment to the debt rate. But otherwise, no. It would be general fund.
Okay. Last question, maybe one after that. Mary, if we're looking at this today as it's 4.5 cents raise in property tax rate, the year 2011 is coming up, and we know that before we get started with the 2006 bond package, we'll probably increase of maybe $40-some million debt service. We're also looking at the 20 police officers that we got to pay, which is another 20, which we're looking at about $50 million. If we do this, I know we cannot carry money forward to another budget cycle, but in a way that if we do get the $38 million, wait, can you come back and try to forecast this out that can save us to year 2011-2012? Because before we even go forward, I think we're looking at 09, 010 colleagues, but I'm worried about 11 and 12. I'm looking at worrying about that we might be starting off anywhere from $50 million to $100 million in a hole before we can get started trying to balance the budget. So by saying that, Mary, is there anything we can do if we do this to forecast that second year out?
The next briefing we have, we will be having, will be part of the bond program briefing, and we'll be having a little bit of a forecast 2 years. Looking out more than 2 years is not very productive because the changes happen. There's so many changes that occur. There probably could be ways to do that, but I will tell you that for the past 4 or 5 years, we've had to look ahead and not been sure how we'll manage each year, because you have expenses that you know you're coming and you're estimating your revenues. So I wouldn't say that the situation for next year is particularly unusual of what it's been the last 4 years.
Well, and this is my last comment probably. You know, I understand that we do not look out 2 years in advance, 3 years in advance, but I still go back to the 2006 bond package, is that when we trying to sell bonds, for 1 year it jumped to $15 million, the debt service jumped to $40 million, and we hire, police officers, which we need for our public safety, and that's a figure which is a $20 million figure, that those numbers out there, and the only way we get revenue is from sales tax or property tax, unless we have a windfall, unless we drill some oil well somewhere and coming in, that we'd be crazy as a council person do not
look at the future, because we know that next year would be an election year, and everybody would say, hey, well, we back in debt again. So, and I said this a year ago, that we got to look into the future. I mean, colleagues, y'all can do whatever y'all want to do, but I think we should look the year, at least 2 years out, what we do today. Thank you, Mayor.
Chairman, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Ms. Koop and I are scrolling through here to try to get a firm handle on the effective rate. So if you go to the slide that talks about effective rate, the 79.37, Dave, is the effective rate, correct?
Yes.
And for all, I got to verbalize this, Dr. Understand. So for all practical purposes, if we do nothing today, we could raise the rate from the 74.79 to the 79.37 today, correct?
You would still have that option later, yes, sir, if you do nothing today.
I'm not suggesting that, but I'm just saying that. And what the effective rate is basically, what is the rate that generates the same amount of revenue?
Yes.
Okay.
In its simplest form, yes.
Okay. In its simplest form, is what is the rate that's... Okay. All right. And the rollback rate is the highest amount, is it the 8%? There he goes. The highest amount that then would trigger the ability of citizens to petition for actually a vote on rolling back the tax rate.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, I was hung up on the effective rate, but now I understand. It's the same amount of revenue as we have in the current, correct? And it's not
yes.
capital, it's ad valorem revenue. Is what we're talking about.
Total property tax.
Well, total property tax.
Yes.
Okay. All right. All right. Thank you. And if I read in there somewhere, one penny is $8.4 million. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Thank you, ma'am.
Okay. Ms. Davis.
Dave, I have one question. If we were, what is the difference between doing the tax rate and increasing property taxes?
The property taxes are determined by two things, property values, and in total our tax roll,
mm-hmm.
and the tax rate.
Okay.
Those two combine to determine the levy, how much the tax bills will be. So this year we've seen a decline in property values. If the council keeps the tax rate the same,
mm-hmm.
there will actually be a decrease in property taxes, because the valuations have gone down in total, 3.55%. So if the tax rate stays the same, as is recommended by the manager, property taxes would go down from the current year to next year.
What about the following year?
Don't know. It's too early to know. There's too many factors.
But if we were to do a small property tax increase, then what would happen to the tax rate?
Each year, the options start over, if you will. So I won't say it has no bearing, but it's the tax rate for 2010-11 is to be determined later by the council.
That is what is hard, because see, next year we'll get into the same situation, because we don't know, we can't forecast anything, that we'll be back at the same situation. And what I'm hearing in my district, even in the up in the some part of the Ferguson area, that they do not mind a small property tax increase if it's going to save some of the major programs that's needed in the city that is below the line. So when we get more into this, I'll have our assistant city manager, Jill, who's going to my town hall meetings and talk about what people's feelings have been. I have one tonight, and I have one this Thursday. And what I'm hearing across the board is, if it's going to save the rec centers, the hours, and all these other things, that a small property tax increase they would support.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Mr. Cooks, for your presentation as usual. Mayor, I move that this council today take a record vote to consider a specific tax rate that exceeds the notice and hearing rate, and that this council call public hearings on the tax rate for Wednesday, September 9th, and Monday, September 14th. I so move.
Now, in order to do that, you need to decide on a specific rate that would be the maximum. And I would say, we drafted this at 79.37. There's actually no need to take that rate vote or hold the public hearings if that's the maximum tax rate.
My motion is for the 84.89 cents.
So your motion then is for 84.89,
that's the
which is going to be a 10-cent increase.
And I'm not suggesting we increase the taxes. My motion is that the council have the flexibility, if it needs it, to go up to that tax rate.
Ms. Davis.
And Mayor, if this does not, if we do not support this particular motion, I would ask that we come back and look at a small tax increase. I'm talking about in order to save our programs that is now needed, our rec center hours. You know, we're talking about a lot of things. We're talking about problems now. Have some of this stuff for these kids. Not have some of these things for the kids. We're going to see a really major problem in crime among youth. So mine is to save the rec centers, save the senior program, save our transportation for seniors, save some necessity that is for poor people. And I know around this council, we might not have poor people in our district, and I have poor people in my district.
Mayor, I understand that if we vote today that we cannot exceed the 84.89, that allows this council, if it chooses, to raise the tax rate. Is that correct?
No, well, we can't raise it beyond the 79 and change. What was it? 79.37.
Without this particular vote. With this vote,
that's correct.
With this vote, we could raise it no greater than 84.89.
Right.
Yes.
If it's just 79.37, we don't need a vote.
Correct.
My motion is not that. My motion is that we allow the council the flexibility, if it chooses, to raise the rate to 84.89%, which would encompass Ms. Davis's concern. But it does not mean we're raising the rate. It just means we have that flexibility if we choose. Mr. Cook, have I correctly stated the option?
Yes, you have.
Okay. That's my motion then.
Any other discussion? Ms. Margolin.
My understanding is that without taking that action, we can raise it if we chose to 79.37, is that right?
You still have
if we do nothing.
If you do nothing today, you still retain
Thank
the
you.
Option to go as high
then
as
I would support. Then I will not support the motion.
Any discussion? I will tell you, I think if this motion would be a giant mistake. We would be sending a signal to businesses and the consumers in a tough time. Even if we couch it in flexibility, we will send the wrong signal at a time when the economy is soft, and I think we ought to be looking out for people. I think this is exactly the wrong signal sent. With that, we'll go a record vote. So, Madam Secretary, please.
Request for a record vote on the motion to have the flexibility to go up to 84.89 if the council so chooses. Is that correct, Mr. Mayor?
That's correct.
Roll call on the motion on the floor. Councilmember Hosto.
And I would also say this also puts in, Dave, the additional public hearings on September 9th
and September 14th.
Right.
And we would be advertising this in the newspaper to put everybody on notice. There's a specific quarter-page ad that has to have indicate the council's considering this tax rate. And so on.
May I ask something of you, please?
I should include me.
Yeah, for questions. If we, I guess the problem I have is we're still doing the old budget process. How do we move forward in this day and time to make sure that we have enough money to save our programs? This is the same stuff we've been doing for the last 17 years or more in this city. how do we move forward and make sure that we are looking at the, we're forecasting this stuff way before next year or the same year? This is the same process that I looked at 25, 30 years ago. And you know what? It hasn't changed.
Well, but Mary, you can jump in. But the process has changed in terms of the price of government and the way that we started. Oh, we started this 6 months earlier than we had before. Do you want to add anything?
The only thing I would say is projecting revenues. You can pretty well project expenses out a couple, 3 years. Revenues are the challenge, so.
Mary, and this is all I'm going to say, and I'm going to continue to harp on this. You have to look at saving some programs for poor people. You're going to have a mess on your hands. And the people are not going to come down here and be jumping on me. I'm going to send them to you. When these programs are cut, go talk to your city manager. She runs the city. She is a mayor form of government. Go talk to her. We have to somehow save some of these problems. And you know, and I don't have a magic wand, but if we look at the sick stuff starting after October 1 and start looking at some of this stuff, is that too early to look
no.
at some of it?
No, we certainly can.
And Secretary?
Mr. Mayor, the motion also includes authorize a public hearing to be held on September 9, 2009 and September 14, 2009 to receive comments on proposed tax rate. First, Councilmember Hostel, for or against the motion?
I'm against the motion.
Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Medrano. Councilmember Newman?
No.
Mayor Pro Tem Carraway?
Not present.
Councilmember Hill?
I'm voting yes.
Councilmember Salazar?
Not present.
Councilmember Davis?
I'm voting yes.
Councilmember Atkins?
I'm voting yes with a comment. And the comment is, number one, that I hear one word where my colleague said flexibility. And flexibility is to be transparent. And to be transparent, she did not say that raise to 84. She said just let call a public hearing so the people know what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
That's transparency. If I'm wrong, you correct me. But I am saying transparency because in my neighborhood, in my community, people said raise tax or whatever. And since they're not here on the Monday morning, we should have ability to go to my community. I ain't talking about District 12, 13, 14, but District 8. I will go back to them and say, hey, this is the option. And transparency is very important to the city of Dallas, especially in hard times. Thank you. My motion would be with Fonseca. Thank you.
As a reference point, we're just voting, so if there's discussion, let's get that out.
I want to put on record, reason why I said, because number one, we said we might send a message to the business people, but we also got the senior and the youth and everyone else. So I just make sure you got transparency what's going on.
That's why
we're
going
to do that earlier. Thank you.
Councilmember Kadane?
No.
Councilmember Allen?
No.
Councilmember Coop?
No.
Councilmember Natinsky?
No.
Councilmember Margolin?
No.
Councilmember Hunt?
No.
Mr. Mayor, the motion fails. Oh, sorry, Mr. Mayor. I am sorry. The motion fails, Mr. Mayor. With two absent when vote was taken, Mayor Pro Tem Carraway and Councilmember Salazar.
Terrific. So with that, we'll just go on about if there won't be those public hearings and the max will be 7937. So with that, Mary, can I turn it over to you then and go into the briefing? We don't need motion.
Mr. Dyer will present the Park and Recreation proposed budget first this morning.
Good morning, Mayor, members of the City Council. It's Monday morning. This is a budget we've been working with for some time. I think most of you have seen it, but we're going to go through it today to hopefully field any questions that you might have and also address any changes that we may have encountered along the way. As you know, we are, with the reduction in the zoo and the departmental reduction, we are The zoo itself was 257 FTEs, and 170 FTEs were reduced through the department for a total of 427 in that reduction. We have O&M expenses that weren't funded, which also added to some projects or some O&M projects that are new bond projects that won't actually be maintained to the proper level next year, and hope those will be funded in the future. Those include Main Street Garden, Fair Park, some spray grounds, trails, and pavilions. On aquatic services, we have $1 million for Bahama Beach and about $1.1 million for pools. We have reduced that budget by reducing the number of pools that will be open next year from 21 to 14. And we also shortened the Bahama Beach schedule from 7 days a week to 6 days a week. And also we'll shorten the season to by 21 days. And that will mean a closing sometime in the middle of August next year. Next page shows you the pools that will be open kind of in a concentric circle to the city limits, if you will. Those are not on the fringes of the city limits, not in the center as well. Athletic field reservations, basically, for a couple of examples for youth practice fields, we have gone from to 50 cents per child per field, which was about 17 cents to begin with. Now we're at 50 cents per child per field per occurrence. The weekend fees have gone from about 23 cents to 83 cents per child per field. So we've gone up significantly, but still within an affordable range, we hope. In order to add new revenues, about $500,000 in fees to adults and youth. Also, we're charging $1 for a run-walk fee. Most of our runs that we have at High Rock Lake and around the city at Fair Park, we are charging $1. Now we're going to $2 per runner, which will increase that revenue budget by $175,000. Bachman Therapeutic, you notice that there is a significant reduction in the FTEs, but not that significant in the hours that we were once providing. That's because of the staffing ratio required in an environment like therapeutic recreation. There's a lot of one-on-one for therapeutic recreation. We were greatly reducing the therapeutic component and opening this facility up more for mainstreaming with some retention of therapeutic services. Environmental management, one FTE was reduced in our EMS compliance program, which will make it a little more difficult for us to achieve EMS compliance, but we think we can make that up. Under Fair Park, operation and maintenance, as you can see, we've reduced that significantly. But also, that number seems a little bit odd because we actually reorganized during the year and moved some programs over, so the reduction in Fair Park is more than is stated under the net change significantly. The service impacts for our nature centers and destination parks, Dallas Library and Botanical Society was reduced from $342,000 to $215,000. The Trinity River Audubon Center, $343,000 to $219,000. Cedar Ridge Preserve, $35,000 to $22,313. Texas Discovery Gardens, $88,645 to $56,511. So each of those agencies is taking approximately 35% reduction across the board, as all of the cultural institutions are throughout the city. Under Parkland Maintain, we have eliminated a lot of contract labor and litter pickup and removal. Basically, our mowing schedule will be reduced significantly, and our litter control will be reduced as well. Under recreation centers, we have reduced the large centers from 60 to 45 hours per week, reduced the hours of operation from 40 to 30 for smaller centers. We're making some of that time up. We're going to move the custodians out of the centers and have a strike team that will come around, which will mean we'll have days that the centers won't be quite as clean, but at least we'll have once or twice a week a full cleaning schedule. The staff will be cleaning during their program hours as well, which is something they're used to, but they're going to have to step up and do a little bit more maintaining of the building itself. Each center's hours will be, as we told you all along, will be molded to the community's desires. And as an example, we have changed the recreation center schedule hours about four times in the last week and a half, simply because as new requests come in from the existing centers, and we try to mold these centers to fit seniors, adults, and youth programming throughout the week. We're continuing to adjust that schedule, and we'll do so until we get the best fit possible with the number of hours that are allocated for these centers. Youth and Volunteer Services, we will eliminate the entire teen program, about $590,000 worth. This program provides oversight staffing for the 21 CDBG camps, which we did not give up. It also provides programmatic and oversight staffing for 14 syndicated camp sites throughout the city. It does not fund 10 after-school programs and 3 syndicated camp sites, and it eliminates all of the citywide youth sports programs, say, of a couple of programs that are actually partnerships with agencies we felt like we need to hang on to at whatever cost. The Zoo and Aquarium, as you know, we're saving about $4.75 million in the zoo this year, thanks to the privatization initiative of the Dallas Zoological Society. And also, the aquarium will be funded based on its operating revenues, which we feel very comfortable with. Golf and tennis and other services, basically, we achieve savings from here by increasing the allocation of the capital assessment for the employees that work on the capital program. That's moved up to 80%. And so that $529,000 savings is basically a more direct impact on the capital funding, which is an assessment of the projects that we have on our books for capital projects throughout the 2006 bond program that will begin paying more for the staff as opposed to the operating budget funding those individuals. That's it in a nutshell. I'm happy to entertain any questions that you may have.
I'm looking for him.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, Tom, I make a point that before we pass any contract or management agreement, I generally look at all the agreements. And kind of disappointed because last time when we voted on this management agreement, which I concurred to it, you know, I got no problem with the agreement, but I do have some concerns. And my concern is fees. If we go back to page 14, Paul, Mr. Dyer, on your presentation, and we have a briefing last week about fees, and I was looking at these fees. I look at about 17 different line items of fees which are going to be increased to the zoo. Could you tell me how much proposed increase of fees would be to the management company, you know, even though they have they took over the zoo yet?
They have not. No, the fees that we're...
Excuse me. They have not took over the zoo, right?
Correct.
So, therefore, when you went to the council last week, I did ask a question to see the contract agreement. I got one here, which dated 2007. And I asked for that contract as that day. I did not get the contract. And I wonder why that we voted on a contract on a management agreement. Can you go back to the park department and you said we're going to raise fees? And I want to know how much those fees are going to be raised to. How much?
To begin with, I wanted to first...
My question is how much revenue and fees that you raised when you went to the park board on the zoo?
The zoo's fees were raised $2.
Just give me the total dollar amount. The 17 different line items.
The total dollar amount is $950,000. 25% which is animal acquisition, 25% is education, 25% is for exhibit development, and 25% was to go to the general fund and will now go to the Dallas Zoological Society to help them make up the $4.75 million deficit.
So therefore, we had $900,000 worth of fees increase.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And the $900,000 fees increase, why was not the council notified? Why did you come to us to vote first and go back to the park department and raise fees of $900,000? So therefore, we less important to the Park Department?
If I may, sir, on page 15 of the briefing I made before you for the Dallas Zoological Society transition, page 15 says, all zoo revenues shall be retained by DZMS, DZS for the future operations. Cost and benefit of the zoo revenue shall include, but are not limited to, parking, gate receipts, food concessions, rides, memberships, and sponsorships. Admission prices shall be reviewed and approved by the Park Board in accordance with the authority set forth in the Dallas City Charter, which means that for the length of this contract, the Society would hope to make up the $4.75 million differential that they have we have saddled them with through fees as one source, one of the many sources, but it's only in this case... The true number is $198,000. Again, the if we had kept the zoo, the money that would have come to the city this year would have been $198,000.
I understand that with no problem, but I'm saying give a courtesy that why do you come to the city council for the approval of the management agreement without letting us know how much fees that we're going back to the park department raised? And this is a simple question. I said, why not you do that? I mean, why? Was there a reason behind
it? Well, at the time, we weren't proposing to raise fees, but raising the fees now means that much more money to the general fund between now and the time when they take over. So we wanted to initiate the fee early so that we would have the benefit of having those fees come to the city prior to October 1.
So do we have any of that $900 million is in those fees going to come to that general fund, or would all the fees stay with the management company?
The entire amount will go to them after October 1.
Okay, so none of that $900,000 will come to the general fund?
It will not, and nor will any other fee increases.
Okay,
in the
and those fees go to the park trust fund?
They go to the zoo
acquisition. And those fees go to the park trust fund?
No, sir.
Okay. And colleagues, I think that, you know, before we, you know, go around and jump and sign a management contract, I believe, Paul, in the future, Tom, we should have a copy of the contract so we know what we're voting on. And I did not know what I was voting on. I love the project. It's a great project. No problem. We're saving money. But then, too, we should at least know what the fee's going to and the right, because we are talking about taxpayer money.
I was just going to, there's one more factor in there, Paul, you might want to talk about, was the closure we were considering in the budget, the closing part of the zoo to save money.
Right. In addition to the savings that we received, the closing of the hill was one element that we had proposed in our budget, and they have agreed to keep that open. So they've assumed a lot more responsibility, including the operation of the hill, including the operation of the savannah, and including a $4.75 million deficit. And to your point, Mr. Atkins, yes, there is $900,000. It will not all go toward that $4.75 million deficit because they have a marketing responsibility, which is outside of that contract, and they have animal acquisition, which is also outside of the contract.
Outside of contract, you know, I know my colleagues don't have this contract, but I know on page 3 or 20, talk about revenue. If revenue exceeds this amount, you know, this amount go there and go to other places or different line items. Again, I have no problem with the contract at all. My deal is transparency, that when I vote on something, I want to know what I'm voting on. I want to see the contract. And that's what I'm saying. I like to see the contract and know what I'm voting on. And with fees, to me, I think it was kind of disrespect to the council. It might not the other colleagues, but to me, that you come to me and vote on something, then the next week you go to the park department and raise fees, and the fees come to $900,000, almost $1 million. That's my concern. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. Mr. Dyer.
Yes, sir.
This is tough.
Very.
This is tough. This is tough on council members who represent citizens who use city services, specifically parks and recreation that are in your care and custody. It's tough on our park board members that are volunteers that have to digest things that they believe in and are passionate about. So I take no joy at all in asking questions about why we're doing things when we're on a downward slide. So, but I want to thank you for your leadership, Paul, and I you and your management team are passionate about our parks and our recreational facilities, so thank you. Page 9. Let's see, is that where I want to start? Yes. Go to page 9, please. You went through this and you talked about proposed changes to contracts for the Arboretum, the Audubon Center, and Cedar and Discovery Gardens and Cedar Ridge Preserve. I presume if you can make these proposed cuts, all the contracts allow for individual annual appropriation changes?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and so it's not like we're renegotiating any of these contracts.
Yes, sir. That's correct. We had they're all subject to appropriation by the city council.
Okay. Because I'm noodling, thinking, okay, we just opened this Audubon Center. I'm a little partisan to the Trinity Audubon Center, given my responsibilities in the Trinity, and now all of a sudden we're cutting back our contribution. Tell me again the dollar amount that we currently provide the Trinity Audubon Center versus what is proposed.
The current budget for this year proposed was $343,000. There was a $124,000 reduction for a net stipend to them of $219,000.
Okay, so $343,000 to $219,000. The Arboretum?
$342,000 to $215,000.
$342,000 to $215,000. Thank
yes.
you. The Texas Discovery Gardens?
$88,645 to $56,511.
And the Cedar Ridge Preserve?
$35,000 to $22,313.
And the basis by which you and your staff came up with this is that 36% number?
Yes, sir.
So you just applied it uniformly, 36% on each one of these?
Yes, sir. That was an attempt for all the cultural institutions in the city of Dallas.
So it's not just specific to Park and Rec, it's all cultural-like institutions.
Yes, I'm just trying to follow that same model.
I hear you. I'm not agreeing or disagreeing. I'm just trying to understand. I've already gotten feedback from people about this and so forth. But okay, let's go to page 11, please. And obviously, one of my follow-up questions is going to be, I'm back at 9, I apologize. One of my follow-up questions is going to be, what's the impact to the service? Well, I'll ask it now. What the heck? What's the impact to the service delivery in each one of these? Do we have an anticipation of the service delivery impact?
I haven't received anything specific. I do know that Cedar Ridge Preserve was probably one of the, because it was such a small budget.
It's a one-person maintenance guy is what it is.
They've probably been the most vocal to
yeah.
us. And
mm-hmm.
so I understand it because it's a very small budget, and one-third of very small is even smaller.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, does it? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, they've already been talking to me about it. So I'm not trying to raise them up above others, but okay. Page 11, I'm sorry, jumping back and forth. And this is something, council members, that I've mentioned once, twice, three times now, the proposed changes to our rec centers, and it's this analogy of, okay, and I've said this to you, manager, that we are taking out services for citizens, particularly youth, and we're not making necessarily changes, and we're hiring 191 additional officers, police officers, and I'm wondering if we're trading here. Are we trading a reduction in services and activities for our young people? And I had a town hall meeting last Thursday with Ms. Hosto, and I verbalized that, and I wanted to make sure that is the struggle that I have right now, is the reduction in services that impacts youth, is that going to shift to be an increase in crime?
I don't think that any of us can give you scientific data that confirm that one way or another. I think that, you know, if you allow this to go on very long, say a year or two, it is a problem. I think, like many of the things in this budget, a one-time tightening of the belt is not a problem over the long haul, but if it goes on very long, yes, I think it is a problem.
Okay. It says eliminates expanded hours to accommodate rec center summer camps. Give me an example, Paul.
Good question. There are summer camps and there are summer camps. We have summer camps that are syndicated camps that are outside recreation
people
centers.
Come in. Right.
Or actually, we go to the parks that are geographically located an area where a rec center is not immediately adjacent. So
okay.
we pick up kids in distressed areas where they can't get to a rec center, and we take those camps to them, and we take them swimming, we take them Six Flags, we take them to the zoo. Those are syndicated camp programs. Yes, sir.
Okay.
Outside the syndicated camp programs, we have recreation center camp programs, which are basically 8 to 6, 3 months a year, where for a nominal fee, the parents come by and drop their kids off. And typically, most of the activities that they bring that we pay for, the transportation and the kids' trips to the zoo are paid for by the parents, but not the staffing. It's the incremental cost.
I'm with you.
So what we'll not have next year, we will not have an operation from 8 to 6, so we will not have those 25 or 30 camp programs where the parents drop their kids off for the day, and it's a very emotional issue for those parents and us as well, our staffer, and it's just a nature of the reduction.
So that component is a byproduct of the 102 FTEs eliminated.
Correct.
I'm on page 11. The 102, part of the 102 FTEs impacts that particular element. Okay, as well as the 102, and we've seen the handouts you've given, or we've gotten at town hall meetings about the changes in the hours, that sort of thing. Okay. Well, Mary, I agree with you that we can't quantify it, but my gut's turning on this issue. Now, a few minutes ago, I voted against the motion that Ms. Hill placed on the floor, but that does not necessarily mean I'd be against, close the door against a rate increase or adjustment, because my gut's turning on this particular issue with the parkway. And I don't know how, what necessarily... I'm sorry? So I don't know. And I'm verbalizing this because it has bothered me as I've gone through town hall meetings and in discussions. So I'm going to probably have to come back to you further, Paul, offline as it relates to the components of this, because I do think this is one of the things that directly touches people. I mean, it's easy to say, oh, we have a $2.7 billion city budget, cut out the waste, the bureaucracy, and all that sort of thing. This is clearly something that directly touches people. Go to page 13, Paul, please.
Yes, sir.
It says, eliminates most citywide youth sports programs. Give me details on that. What do you mean by that? Is this league play? Is that what you're talking about?
These are kids that come to us. We have some 1,700 to 3,000 kids each year that come to us, and we have summer programs that actually are competitions between rec centers. It's baseball, basketball, football, and so these programs are staffed by those 102 FTEs, and so the centers will be open, but there's not staffing for those programs, and so we're eliminating those programs and actually in jeopardy of losing a couple of the sponsors that we have.
Yeah, I'm going to offline come to you and ask for additional information on this too. Yes. So, mentioned the centers will be open. We won't have the staffing, so there's potential that youth will show up at a rec center.
It's basically we'll
and
be there.
Have an organized activity or event.
Correct. We'll have ping pong paddles and basketballs, but there won't be organized activities.
Okay.
And classes.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Paul.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Ms. Davis, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Is Jill here? And while we're waiting on Jill, I just wanted Jill to be here at the last budget town hall meeting that I had, which was, Jill, can you go up there with Paul, please, ma'am? At the last budget town hall meeting that I had, which was at Eloise Lundy Rec Center, and I just want to make sure that I'm right for the record, and because you gave me my notes that was from the meeting. We had a showing of hands, 22 to 1, who supported a very small raising tax by a small amount to restore youth senior library material.
Mm-hmm.
Program and the
yes.
programs.
Right.
They also said there was an overwhelming support to keep the hours or program.
They wanted both the hours and the programming at Eloise Lundy.
Right. And the reason was they want the working parents. The working parents needed the hours from 7:30 to 8 for after school and camp programs for their kids. The local school principal needed the center open during the morning hours because the school used the center for PE programs that pay $16,000 a year for the youth. The social service agent called for youth conflict service would not be able to provide these services if the center was closed. And then they said some other things, but the purpose of the, and all they said, restore the funding for library material and don't hire extra officers. Instead, use the money to fund youth programs to keep the hours open at the rec centers.
Right.
Okay. Paul. Thank you, Jill. What will we be losing? Just be very honest with me. What will we be losing with this type of devastation?
Well, as Ms. Councilman Newman said, our alluded to, we will lose all the citywide youth sports programs. We'll have three people for 45 centers, which is a very utilitarian budget. If someone's sick, then we've got a couple of people to cover it, but if we have any kind of, it'll be very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
We'll lose 17 hours per rec center on the average
mm-hmm.
across the city. It, also, that 17 hours is, again, it's the average, and some centers, because of their ability to generate revenue, can be open more hours than that.
Mm-hmm.
So, in some areas where it's needed, there are more hours. We will definitely lose the early morning fitness programs because we can't staff those. We don't have the hours to staff folks who want to come in and work out in the mornings. Perhaps one of the more important things for the rec center programming, during the hours that we're open, there will be very little programming because those additional staff members, those 102 staff members, are the ones that provide programming. And it's not, it is classes, it's teaching them life skills, it's teaching them helping them with games and all sorts of things. So it's a very important thing. The daycare that I mentioned, 8 to 6, 3 months a year, is something we'll lose, which is very important to the parents.
Okay.
When they come drop their kids off. We have holiday camps that are during the spring break and also during the winter vacation months. And those parents also that are working come by and drop those kids off. So we have holiday camps that run 8 to 6 during those periods as well. 10 after-school programs, 3 syndicated camp programs. And it may be something that we haven't talked about, but we'll lose special events that we have for the community in the parks that are special days, special picnics and things like that, but we don't have the staff to do that as well. So there's a lot to be said for that.
Okay. The other thing, I know that your park board commission have been meeting. What are some of the options? Can the managers of those rec centers set some of their own hours?
Absolutely. In fact, as I mentioned earlier, we have set the schedule early on based on a model, and that has changed probably at virtually every recreation center.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say that probably 75% or 80% of the rec centers now want Saturday programming. Some of them don't want Saturday programming, so we've kept the hours in the morning for seniors, but it is very much a model that first takes care of the kids after school, if that need is there, and I would say that's probably 95% of those recreation centers need those 4 hours from
mm-hmm.
2:30 to 6:30. After that standard, it's really up to the community. Do we need programming for adults in the evening? Do we need programming for seniors in the morning? Do we need sports programming for youth on Saturdays? And it's really up to those hours are very flexible.
Okay. Now, I want to go back to, with Fair Park, and thank you, Paul, on page 8, are we also changing, now with the fair starting in the end of September, how would that work? How would the fair work? How would this play into part with the fair? Will the fair be here before we approve this budget? So it really won't affect the fair this year.
No, ma'am, it should not affect. Well, the fair pretty much is its own entity, and they have their own revenues, and it has little to do. We are make-ready agents for the fair. We get the buildings ready, and they take over, and we step aside. They pick up the meters for the utilities, and they manage the entire grounds, and our staff, basically, we still assist them during the fair, but it's pretty much a standalone operation based on their particular revenues.
Okay, and but next year it will go the same way. They would manage and do it themselves.
Yes, ma'am, that's
okay.
Correct.
So we wouldn't have to worry about that.
That's true, yes.
Okay then. Dave, what I was saying, I do support you, what you were saying a few minutes ago. We have to, this is bothering me, the rec centers. Because in our senior programs, somehow we're going to have to look at this budget very, very closely and decide how we want to deal with our hours. And my concern are the hours for the rec center. Now, if the managers could perhaps set their own time, that might be something that I would support. But clearly, for example, I met with my recreation, my rec center managers, and one of the problems seems to be Eloise Lundy. The other manager said that if they had to live with the hours, within 45 hours, that they could. Eloise Lundy is the only one that says that she need her extra 2 hours. So if the managers could set their own hours, I might support that. But we somehow need to look at the rec centers.
What we don't have in flexibility is the increase in hours. We have, within those 45 hours, we're trying to stay pretty structured, because if we move to 3 hours more here or 5 hours more at this rec center, then that changes the standard for everyone. And there's not a, I have a gentleman that came to the park board to speak, and he said, I would like to pick up some hours that someone doesn't want. And I said, well, as soon as we get the call from the first rec center that doesn't want some of their hours, we'll be sure and call you. But there aren't any centers at this point that would like to give up some hours to
Of. Thank you, Paul. And both of my town hall meetings, everyone, one at the Martin Luther King Center, the one at Eloise Lundy, everybody have said that they will support a very small tax increase if it was going to save some of our programs, and most of all our programs for this year. Thank you so much, Mayor.
Thank you. Ms. Hartwell, please.
Thank you, Mayor. I was at the same town hall meeting that Dave was at Thursday night. I think that the bottom line here is that the reduction in staff is where we're losing, where we're going to have a deficit with addressing our youth and youth programming. So, you know, if there's any way we can look at that to address the youth programming, that would be a place that would need some more consideration. On the hours, what I'm hearing is that where we really are going to need it is in the 3 months in the summertime when parents don't have a place to take their kids before they go to work. So we're talking about 12 weeks in the summertime of needed additional hours. So my suggestion would be that we look at CDBG reprogramming money in January to pick up some of those 12 weeks of recreation at center hours that people use the rec centers for that activity. So you know, my focus this year and next year is graffiti, and part of that is finding additional things or alternative things for our youth to do so that they're not out doing graffiti at night and we tire them out before 10 o'clock so they don't have to go outside and go tag. So once again, my concern is that we need staffing to provide some of the programs, and if there's some way that we can add some staffing, that would take care of that issue. But I think as far as the rec center hours, if we focus on the summer months of next year and making sure that we address some of the reprogramming money in CDBG, I think you could take care of it that way. But, you know, it's a tough deal. We cannot ignore the youth situation in our city, and we've got to figure out a way to bring some of those staffing levels to a place where we can continue some of the programs that are effective. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms.
Hutt, please. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I agree with my colleagues, Ms. Hosto and Mr. Newman, who talked about the importance of after-school programs and rec centers, especially in the realm of crime prevention. I mean, there's just no question. Ms. Medrano always puts a very fine point on this, that cities that focus on after-school programs, rec centers, youth programs, that's one way they address crime. That's one way they bring crime down in their city. So I don't want us to be myopic and think that hiring 191 police is the solution to address crime, because I think this is just as important. And so I am going to be looking for ways that we can address several parts of these reductions. One, if we can look at the slide about the $1.3 million reduction in youth programs. I think that's around 11, 13. What is the staff for the youth council? I mean, what's the funding for that?
Youth council is just, these individuals will continue to handle that. It's not, I mean, we're losing the staff that handles the youth council, so we'll just have to kind of catch as catch can.
I want to be honest with you. I'm not worried about that. We can cut the staff to that altogether. The youth council, you're talking about the youth council that we appoint folks to.
Correct. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, I'm not worried about that. That's 14 kids off the street, and I have a feeling they're good kids. So
it's a small return.
Yeah, you know that. Yeah, especially the chair. Exactly. I'm more worried about the 1,700 young folks who will be affected by the elimination of certain programs by the city. So that concerns me a great deal. And I imagine that's the bulk of the $1.3 million that we're eliminating along with these other programs. Certainly we can use some CDBG funds to fund this gap. I mean, we can look for that. We're not going to be able to do that until January, though. And we're not going to find as much money as we need to fill this entire hole. So I think we've got to look at other places in this budget. And this isn't a criticism of you. You're addressing the budget you've got, Paul. But I think as a priority for this city, many of us on this council view our recreation centers and youth programs not simply as fun programs for kids, but as an alternative that allows them to engage in productive activities as opposed to either graffiti or something more negative than that. So I think it's absolutely critical. Some questions for you. On page 11 on the rec centers, and you may have answered this, but I missed it. Are we looking at each rec center and what the attendance is at each rec center as we address service reductions? Because it seems to me that we've just done a one-size-fits-all. That it's if you're a small rec center, you get cut 15 hours. If you're a large rec center, you get cut down to 45 hours. That we've done no analysis of what's the attendance, how well attended. I mean, there may be some rec centers that just have a few dozen people. There may be some that have hundreds. So tell me a little bit about that.
This is a difficult question because we have every center in the city could use 50 or 60 hours. Some centers, particularly those where there people can afford to pay, we may run 90 hours at some centers because we have the ability to pay. My concern was if we can't get back to the base level, which the barest minimum center needs, then it would be difficult to say, okay, we'll open up these others so that I've got a great disparity around the city. I don't think I could defend that before you. And I know that if you look at strictly at the model, after 60 hours, then there are other centers that could fill up, as I mentioned, every evening, both weekends, and people will be willing to pay for it. But it's in areas where people can afford to pay for it.
Okay, when you say people would be willing to pay for it,
I don't understand. We have what are called contract fee classes, and those individuals will pay for karate, they'll pay for whatever, and we can fill up gymnastics, we can fill the rec center hours on Saturdays and Sundays and nights with people that are not our staff that we bring in to provide those classes, but you have to pay for it in order to be able to staff it.
Well, do those classes pay for themselves and pay for the operation of the rec center?
Not completely. If you've got the hours already up to 60 or 62, then you can make some adjustments, and they tend to help. They almost pay for themselves for the most part. Those incremental hours.
Why don't we think more creatively then and think about in some of those centers where folks can pay? That if there's a $1 fee tacked on, I mean, what is the fee that they would have to pay to completely have cost recovery for those hours? Well, is there a reason that we haven't looked at that?
It depends on if you've got two classes in the building or three classes during that time period, it tends to pay for itself because our revenues are higher. If you've got one class, it doesn't pay for itself. So it's an individual time slot basis. And again, I hesitated to go there because if I did that, I'd have about six centers in the north that would they would be open 60, 70, 80 hours at a very minimal or no cost. And I just, in this environment, it's hard to do that when we're denying those that need hours, just basic hours, those hours. And so it was maybe a bad decision, but again, I would be defending on either side of that.
Okay. Well, it's and probably none of these centers are in my district either, if they're more northern centers. But I would really like to see more analysis on that and understand which centers we're talking about, whether we can get full cost recovery if we have, you know, several of these programs going on at once. Because it doesn't make sense to me that we're just going to close them because we don't want to offend other centers, like in my district that might not be able to, you know, to meet that criteria. So can we look at that a little bit more? At least you can give us, the council, that information. We can make that decision if we feel like that's the direction we want to go in. But can you just
gather? I can give you the centers that I think would probably come very close to supporting those hours.
Okay, just
some level.
Yeah, just give us a list of those. That would be helpful. And aside from those types of programs, is there a disparity, a large disparity in some of our rec center use and the attendance at our rec centers? Just do this for me, Paul. Give me a list of attendance at our rec centers.
Okay.
Can you do that?
The rec center attendance is not as great in the basic hours as other amenities, such as pools, but certainly...
Wait, just say that one more time, I'm sorry.
So the disparity between the users in the rec centers is not as great in the basic hours, the 60 hours. Once you get beyond that, if we kept some of the centers open 90 hours, we may not have the participation that we would have at the other centers where there's a lot of activity, people willing to pay, with a lot more disposable income. But
okay, well, why don't you explain that in the memo? Because I don't want to see just everyone brought down to 60 hours. If everyone were open 60 hours, what would the attendance be? Give us actual attendance numbers, okay?
Okay.
At each of these locations.
That's a moving target, too, because it depends on how much you're willing to subsidize. And, you know, some of them are on a fine line, some are a 10% subsidy, some are...
Well, just explain that in the memo.
Okay.
Kind of give us a little more information there. But I think Delia's point is well taken about the summer months, focusing on the summer months and seeing if we can have, unless I don't want to misstate what you said, but the idea of using as much using more funding to focus on summer months.
Right. The summer months are ones that are actually less likely to pay for themselves because they're in more disadvantaged areas. The summer month programs where folks drop off their kids for a camp, there's about 20 of the centers, and most of those are in the southern sector where people need those services.
Exactly. And so are we focusing more on, instead of just every month spending the same amount at a rec center, my question is, are we focusing on spending a little less in January, spending a little more in June?
That would require a staffing scenario where we have to staff up and staff down, which
yes.
is a little more difficult because we're on a minimum staff right now to operate a center. At three FTEs, we can't go anywhere. We were in the 80s, we were 11 and a half FTEs. We went down to 5 or 6, and now we're down to 3. I can't go any lower than that without jeopardizing.
You can't go lower in January. You can't really spend any less in January, is what you're saying, to operate the center.
It'd be very difficult.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Well, I can tell you, Paul, this is something I'm going to be looking very closely at, trying to find ways that we can use some money from somewhere else. And it may be, frankly, looking at, you know, hiring, you know, 50 police officers out of our general fund rather than the 100 we're talking about. Then, because this, to me, again, this is just as important as a crime reduction measure as putting more police on the street, and we're going to have literally hundreds of new police officers coming online within the next 18 months. So we've got a lot to think about, colleagues. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mayor. Paul and Angela, excellent, and I'm with you with that, and I'm going to make a few comments about it. How many new facilities do we have online to be built or in the pipeline, the park department? Projects, maybe?
Well, I've got a couple of a downtown park that's yet to be built. Most of our program is renovations of existing facilities. We've got replacement shelters. We've got replacement playgrounds. Very little new facilities. There are a couple of requests for some spray grounds, which are about $750,000, and some folks are saying they'd like to reprogram some of their other parks monies for that, but very little in the way of new facilities to be built from this point.
You say very little. Now, what is that very little?
I'm not sure, Mr. Carraway. It's out of $342 million, I need to go back and get you a report.
We don't know what facilities that we're building.
We're not building any rec centers. There's probably, of the rec centers, there's probably 27 or 28 that have been renovated. There are no new rec centers to be built. There are no new pools to be built. There are no new, there are some playgrounds being renovated. There's no new facilities basically at all, with the exception of just one downtown park that's left to be built.
Okay, is that the Woodall Rogers?
No, sir, that's the Belo Gardens.
What now?
Belo Gardens, which is
Belo Gardens
on the west end of downtown.
How many employees have been riffed at the park department, this, you know, total number?
Well, as a total number for this reduction that's coming up,
right?
We have 170 departmental positions that are being riffed, not employees, but positions. We have a lot of vacancies,
okay,
in part-timers, and then 257 from the zoo, for a total of 427.
All right, but not including the zoo.
Not including the zoo, 170, yes, sir.
Something like that, so total 170. Let me say one thing that, as related to the youth and these reductions, on page 13, I think it is. Okay. Oh, yeah, page 13, the first bullet, the 1,700 youth, including staffing for the youth council. Now, what is the youth council? Is that our
youth board? That's the city council, youth council, the 14 members of the youth commission.
Right. Now, so has the council voted to disband that board? Have we voted to disband that board?
We're not disbanding that board.
I understand.
Yeah.
That. Right. But with you pulling back the staffing from it, what does that do, and who takes on that responsibility? Who would take on the responsibility? We certainly have not sunsetted it.
Correct.
We're not planning the sunset.
That's correct.
So,
yes,
who, in your opinion, if you're pulling out, who's going to staff it?
We'll staff.
Because you're saying that includes the staffing of the youth council. So effectively, if you all pull your staff, we don't have a youth council.
Means we're going to have to find some way to make it up.
Well, who's going to do that?
We'll do that with our, you know,
so we can scratch out that you all are not going to staff it.
Correct.
You are going to staff it.
We've got to do it. But it does. Those individuals that were responsible are no longer working for the, will no longer be working for the city, because there are a lot of other activities that went along with that. So we're just going to be actually holding the meetings, and it'll be a very much like everything else in the system, scale back.
Yeah, boy. All right. So now, in the swimming pools, and before I get to the zoo, of the swimming pools that are being closed, now how do we come to that determination? And the problem that I'm having is that, one, we have, and you're leaving open seven, but there are a couple of areas that I believe personally, and it may be two or three, that should be left open. Now, that's for the council person in that area to, that's their discretion to discuss with you. But in District 8, if you don't mind, Mr. Atkins, Tommy Allen, geographically, in my personal opinion, is important. Either it would be Tommy Allen or Glendale, but since we have Bonneville in District 4, I would lean to go to Tommy Allen if we were to. And in South Dallas proper, I know we have a spray ground in that area, but then when you look at X-Line, that proposes a problem as far as I'm concerned. And then Browalder, maybe, and I'm not really certain, but I want to express that we have to figure out and find a way, because just as we had the discussion of last week, this is park and recreation, and kids, if we don't give them something to do, they're going to find other things to do. then it goes back to what Ms. Hunt was expressing and Ms. Hostel and others as related to if the kids are not busy and we are the park and recreation department, we got to give them something to do. And kids get busy during the summer. And if they're staying at home, they get hot in the house. They're not playing a lot of cartoons like they used to play on TV every day. Kids want to get out and move around, and they're going to find other things to do. So I just wonder, the moves that we are making, even though I'm not being critical of you, don't get me wrong, and I'm not being critical of the park department, I just want to make sure that these moves are well thought out and well planned. As related to hurting people's feelings in the north and the south, let's be real. The people north, and I know for a fact, because I got some constituents out there in District 13, and let me tell you, they believe in clogging. Now they go and they clog, and those little old ladies get in there and they put those clogs on, and that's what they live to do, is to clog. I don't even know how to clog, but at the same time, I don't know any. But here's the deal. But the seniors over in the south, they don't know a thing about clogging. They want to do something else totally different. So if there are certain types of classes and things that folks on one side of town would like to do and would like to pay for and wouldn't mind playing bridge when folks over in the south want to play spades or dominoes or whatever they want to play, I think it's incumbent upon us to tailor make it and not go just across the board and worry about hurting people's feelings. I think we should take another look at the entire program and try to redesign it and configure it to where certainly my folks at Baker Saint are not going to be mad if folks in the north are paying for something that the folks in the south don't want to do, and vice versa. I know about playing equal politics across the board and not want to step on people's feelings and all of that, but at the same token, this is Park and Rec, and we're to give those people, seniors and kids, what they want to do. So I don't believe in crossing just across the line to satisfy each and every rec center. I think that those rec centers need to take another look. Now, Mary, I'll ask you, since this is budget, how do you, because you're presenting this budget, this is a part of your budget that you're presenting, do you review the park budget? And I'm not going to ask you if there are things that you would change and would not do, more than I'll keep it in the line of overseeing. Are you all collaborating together to where we're overseeing exactly what is happening so when these things are taking place, we can know the bottom line cost and figure?
There's a general overview of the review of the Parks Department budget, and we work with it, with them putting it together. It's high level because the parks works a little differently than the rest of the departments.
But you don't dwell often into it.
No, sir.
Well, in October, I'd love for you to start so that we can have the budget, because as Mr. Atkins pulled me to the side, and speaking of the zoo, and I appreciate everyone that's supporting the zoo, and the fact that I'm excited about it and promoting it, and I know it's going to be fantastic. We went to a meeting the other day, and to Nell, I'll say that meeting has a lot of enthusiasm. But I think your concerns, I was not here when you voiced them, but you voiced them to me, was the fact that of the fees that were changed. Now, we knew that the fees were going to change. I knew that there was going to be a hike in the fees, but I think from what I'm speaking with Mr. Atkins on, that we probably would have loved to have seen and had some type of input as related to the fees. Will this come back to us, or is this the approved new fees when we go up from $10 to $12 and $7 to
$9?
Paul?
That's the rule of council. We went up on probably 60 or 70 fees, including the arbor, even the TDP. All that was specifically talking about the zoo. This is one of the many fees that we approve, we look at every year, and it's just, you know, certainly if the council wants to review those fees, that is your prerogative.
But I guess my point is, should this have not been brought back to before soon?
It hasn't been 50 years, and so again, if you'd like to, I'd be glad to do that, sir. I'm just, at this point, we're looking at fees across the board. The reason it was implemented earlier was because he felt like that if we're going to raise the fees, let's do it now across the board so we can generate some revenue for this year's budget.
And I'm not arguing that point. Let me tell you the point of argument is that when I go to my town hall meeting tonight as a council person, I want to know. And if the question is asked of me, what, and I don't know and didn't have any input, it just flat up why is it fair for a council person also me to know so that when asked, I won't be blindsided. I'll be able to stand up and say, and when I'm speaking at these breakfasts and I'm talking to the people and I'm promoting the zoo, I think it is fair for me to have the knowledge of what is going on instead of me not knowing and at the breakfast group they ask me something and I'm standing up and I don't know the answer. I should know the answer. It's basically what I think of accommodative with any type of changes. Just a good means of the answer.
We've all the fees on last Thursday, and there'll be a memo coming to you shortly. We've not resolved some of them because of the fair part. There's still some issues, and there's still a couple of them we're looking at on athletic fields. But so we're not finished the deliberations yet. But as soon as we finish that, I will certainly send a memo to council explaining what all of the fees that will be implemented.
Well, and then lastly, and I want to touch on one as related to that's not in my district, and as related to Southern States, I'll just touch that out there. Now, we're into a discussion of the sale of Southern States and the closure of Southern States. Those employees at Southern States, are they, should we close it? Are they a part of the 170 pronounced RIF people?
Yes, they'll also be allowed to apply for positions as well.
But are they a part of your 170?
They are at this point, yes.
Now, how would we, before we decide whether we're going to sell it or not, how would you have the wherewithal to include them in the RIF?
Only because the notification requires...
We haven't voted on it.
I understand, sir.
But you're counting those people as already gone. So we're saying...
Okay.
We're saying... We're pre-stating that Southern States is not going to be here.
That's not true.
Well, if they are part of the RIF,
that's not true, sir.
That is plain.
Everyone that's on the RIF list is an option. If we don't notify these individuals legally in time for them to be RIF, you don't have the option. So everyone that's on the RIF list could be pulled back by this council any day between now and October 1 and put back in the RIF director's office. If we don't put them on the RIF list, there is no option to RIF them.
The ones
that I don't know specifically which employees are over there and which ones I haven't seen all the RIF notices that went to them, but
you give me a list of that today, and you're saying to me that those employees at that catering have received a RIF notice.
If they haven't, it means there were other jobs for them in the department. There's so many people and so many people affected, I don't know that for sure. But I do know that if anybody receives a RIF notice, it's only because we were trying to put them in a position to be RIF. But there's so many vacancies in the park system right now. That's why we only had 29 people RIF. So it's very unlikely that they received a RIF notice, but the positions that we RIFed were just so many in the vacancies that we were able to place everyone back in position. So only 29 people actually received RIF notices for the Park Department.
Right. So, but now my problem is, let me tell you my problem is, and I'm going to close here, but here's my concern. As it relates to Southern States, if those that are working there currently, that are employed by the City of Dallas, have already received a RIF notice.
I don't know that for sure,
but let me explain. It is my contention that we've made a pre-decision to close and eliminate Southern States if they have. Now, if they haven't, I'm not having a problem with it. But then,
if they haven't, let me say that particular site.
Okay, good. Now, here's it. So, if they've not received RIF notices at Southern States, then the 8 or 10 employees will increase your number from 170 to 180. Am I not correct?
No, so all the numbers that are being RIF are accounted for.
Okay. So, good. So now, if indeed and when we close it, should it happen, then 10 more employees of the city of Dallas will not have jobs.
That's not true.
Okay. There are so many vacancies. Everyone that we're listening will have positions.
It's a very complicated thing.
All right.
Now, if those positions are eliminated, we're going to have to hire some people back. It means we can hire that many more back.
All right. We need to deal with it, but let me tell you where I'm coming from. And let me be clear. If indeed that skating ring is closed, it must be taken into consideration that those people that are currently working there, since they are not a part of the 170 RIF, are going to not have a job.
That is true.
Okay. Where will they work?
There are a lot of vacancies in recreation centers, and those recreation center folks have been filling those positions temporarily, and so we'll just be able to hire fewer back as part of our reinstatement program.
But now, isn't it not true that the 170 that are here have the third option to being hired, and these people not being a part of the RIF would be pushed to the back of the line because they're not a part of the 840?
Thank you, actually. Most of the people at Southern State, we have a lot of temporary laborers. Those are temporary laborers. The people that were risked, the 29 people that were risked in the department that we hope to get back as part of the rehiring process, are permanent people. We have probably 300 temporary folks that were given letters of non-employment, but they're not risked as it is. But again, I can't tell you the formula because there are people who are being interviewed to come back to work for us as part of this process.
All right, let me just say this so you know. I got some skates that I'm going to bought because I'm going to start skating, and I'm going to skate in Southern Skate 8 miles. I'm going to do it for exercise and fun. But here's the deal. I was at... Yeah, there you go. I'm coming today and start taking lessons. But here's what we are, Paul. The employees there do not know anything about what is going on. They've not received any...
No, because they're being retained. They're not in jeopardy.
Okay. I'm going to wait till you stop interrupting me.
I'm sorry.
You seem to know what I'm saying. The employees do not know what is going on at Southern Skate. Period. They don't know of a potential sale. They've not received a RIF. They don't know anything. They're there working just as happy as they can be. If indeed we close it, according to the council member of the district, if indeed it should be sold and closed, my concern is what will happen to those 8 or 10 employees, the little DJ with his little psychic shirt on, the people in the concessions, the folks taking the dollars, those folks will be losing their jobs. If you can assure me that those folks will have an opportunity, because I don't know any other DJs we have going around, but I'm asking you, because I want to make sure it's clear and on the record, that other folks will be losing jobs in conjunction with some of the decisions that we're making during this budget process. And it is what it is.
Again, those individuals that are working for us that are temporary, we have all sorts of temporary positions open because there are so many in the department. So only 29 positions, and those weren't any of the 29 full-time positions that were being ripped. We have openings. We need to go back and fill some positions, and those people are working for us. And I can't say for sure that those temporary employees will be retained. And we're still waiting for the council to make a decision on Southern State. That is your option, and we will comply with whatever the council asks us to do.
And I'll close now, man. Let me just say this. I'd love for the council, one, for us, and as long as you would, as possible. You all got to see Southern State. We can't sit here and just continue to make decisions on a report without seeing it and seeing the neighborhood and the things around it. We're making some decisions, granted, that are recommended decisions, are supported by the elected person there. However, when you look at the impact, we're closing recreation centers, we're reducing hours to the pool, we're closing and we're reducing hours to the library. We're saying that, hey, what are and what's left in recreation for kids to be able and seniors to do? So we're going to, I think we need some type of I'm saying and suggesting that we really need to do a total overhaul and look at what is going on and at the resources that we have and the options that we're leaving on the table and the options that we're proposing to take off the table, more importantly. Because maybe there are other ways how we can readjust some things, Paul. And CW is going to come work with you. I want you to know that. Okay, that's my plan. So we need to review and figure out a way before we hastily make some moves, because it's not just the substance cases I'm concerned about, but I'm concerned about some of the earlier things that you spoke about, the recreation centers and the things that folks in the north would like to do and some folks would like to pay for, but we don't want to make that move because we might offend somebody. Well, let's figure out a way to find the things that will help the folks that may feel offended, but at the same token, save us the money. So I'm going to stop there. Mary, what I'd like you to do is what I ask, and I ask every request of you. That is to enthrone and let's do some type of holding hand overlook of where we are and what we can do beginning in October. Angela, if you would, I'd love for us to take a tour and go and skate and see the skating facility and to see if it is worth us doing the very thing that we're talking about doing and if there may be some other alternatives that we can do, okay? So we're going to do a city council skate day. So everybody get your skates and give us your sizes, Ms. Margolin, and we'll go there and give us some knee pads and everything. To get your sizes where it's at, good. But we should do some team summer skate parties and some of everything. I mean, I just believe that there are some things that we can do before we begin to pull the plug on the kids. We've got to keep them active. Thank you, Paul. Thank you for taking so long.
Thank you, Mayor. You can share away what day is skate day today, because I want to get you straight before I go out there. Okay. All right, that's the reality now. Mr. Donner, can you pull up slide 4? This is just a comment, but it's to set you up for a question later. 95% of District 12 just went out off the top of your map and isn't even on there. So,
It didn't fit a circle.
75,000 people or 80,000 that you just left off the map, and 3 miles of the city going north from there. But it really doesn't matter because there's no pools either open or closed up there. So it's probably not relevant to that particular map, but it may be relevant to some of my other questions. So it'd be really good if we had a citywide map when we show facilities or lack thereof.
So noted. My apologies.
Page 5. My question on the athletic league fees and so forth are, if you reduce the amount, the 1.5 FTE, are you still going to have enough people to properly manage the reservations and so forth, because it is a high activity operation?
Good question. It is a high activity operation. We have these monitors in the last few years. What they've done is they've helped us with alcohol consumption and also any kind of tip that may exist or rip that may exist over the use of the field. Someone may claim they have a field and they don't. But so we have these monitors that are available during the evenings on weekends. But so we're having a lot of trouble with alcohol abuse, and so they've been able to manage that very well, and that may be something we'll suffer for some time, for a little while. But hopefully there's a new culture in the system. People are now used to not drinking during athletic events, particularly kids are around, and so that's helped a lot.
Okay. And the other thing is with regard to those operations, and I know that, these are good activities for everybody to be involved in,
But a lot of the so-called 501c3 nonprofit operations, I'm not throwing everybody in that bucket, some of them seem to have morphed into really being businesses under a nonprofit guise. Is there any differentiation there? Because you've got public facilities, and on one hand you want, you know, kids to be using them, but you know, if we're entering a commercial area where we're now renting out our fields and people are making money at it, I might have a little concern over that. So I don't know if you have an answer now. I think it's something you need
to. I have your same concern. I know that there are some leagues in the north that charge kids $350, $385 for a season.
The $50 reservation.
And the reservations basically for youth are 30, 12, and 20. That works out to be went from youth athletic fields from 17 cents to 50 cents per occurrence per child. And then on the weekends, it went from 23 cents to 83 cents per child. So our cost as a part of that $386 annual charge is almost, it's just infinitesimal.
And I'm not advocating we charge anymore. All I'm asking is to make sure that we don't find ourselves in a situation where we're supporting soccer fields from a public viewpoint that are indeed morphing over into commercial uses. Because we're a landlord, then maybe full cost recovery is something we ought to be looking at.
Right.
And I'm sure it costs us more than 17 cents for kids to keep one of those fields going. Let me move on. On page 10. With regard to the maintenance, you know, I'm concerned that if we don't keep the parks and other public park facilities clean, we're going to be sending the wrong message to the public in general. Have we thought about trying to recruit neighborhood groups and HOAs and other volunteer organizations, such as you see groups along the highways, they, you know, volunteer to keep the stretch of highway clean. And I understand that, you know, it's a tough year, but I would think we're going to have to be proactive, because just saying we're going to clean up the park less, I don't think is a long-term good solution. So we're going to think out of the box as to how we're going to receive getting the park, keeping them just as clean as they are with less resources.
Okay. Volunteers are very difficult, because we have to pick up someone 100 sites 3 times a week. Having a volunteer group go out to a park to pick up on a weekend, it's not unachievable. Having them to do that at 300 different times per event per week throughout the city is virtually impossible. So we need to find ways that are, you know, we've looked at the prison release programs and have used those somewhat. Again, the volunteers are good for a major cleanup for a weekend. Once they're spent, you won't see them again.
I'll leave that up to you, Paul, and by your phone director, okay? And, you know, just see if we can't do something to mitigate the fact so that we're not put in a position where people complain about why the parks are not being maintained. The answer is, well, we just don't have enough money. Okay. So what we ought to do is ask that person to help get it clean.
Right, okay. Okay.
11 and 12 is talking about the rec centers. And I know you made a mention that it changed 3 times in the last week or so. So the memo that I got about 2 weeks ago is probably irrelevant. But I did some quick math and looked at the number of hours and the various rec centers were going to be open and where they were located and the preponderance or lack thereof of rec centers in certain areas. So my question is, and I think somebody asked it earlier, maybe Ms. Hunt, if we looked at the service area for a rec center as an example. In Barlow's Dallas, there are 2 rec centers, or 2.5 if you count one that I could share with Ms. Coop. In other areas, if you look at them just on a map, there's an awful lot of them. Now, I can't tell you exactly how big every particular one is. So if we're trying to keep it as equitable as possible, and you have an area of town that doesn't have as many, and you cut them to the same number of hours that other parts of the city have more rec centers, obviously you've got heavier usage at a rec center when you don't have as many choices to go to. So I would like you to look at that, and I'm not trying to get into the weeds too much, but if you took my district as an example, you've got about 40,000 people per resident having used one center. So if you take those number of people and tell them and do the math, how many are kids and so forth and so on, you've got real heavy usage. If you go somewhere else, and I'm just going to say, there's four rec centers. Well, now you have half the amount of need for it on a per rec center basis. So maybe a map like the one that we talked to on slide four with the rest of the city on there, showing dots of all the rec centers, either large or small, would give us some better idea of the dispersion of circle of rec centers around the city, and hence the area and the number of people that they each have to serve. Okay. You talked about paid programs at rec centers, and this came up at a town hall meeting I had last week. One gentleman wanted to know why we were cutting back the hours, and we were cutting back. The first thing to be eliminated were the things that he was going up to the rec center to pay for a room to teach a course in something. So my question is, do we get back our, how do we calculate that we get back our cost recovery? And as an example, this one gentleman who charges $25 times every person that shows up to that class, are we then a low-cost source of commercial rental space for him? Or is it better for the community that we do it there and he not do it somewhere else? And then if we're getting recovery on that, and it's enabling us to keep the rec center open more hours, and those are the ones that we're going to cut off, it seems we're in this circle here. We're not going to get the benefit of the money because we're kicking out the people who are bringing the money. But at the same time, if he's using a room that the after-school kids and the other public necessities need, we seem to be at odds with ourselves.
It's a very complex formula, and to the extent that, let's suppose that we have a lot of adult classes at night that we can fit within 45 hours. As I told the council about a month ago, during the next couple of months, I proposed to you that I would come back with a model that would look at all the recreation centers and see which ones could be productive. If there's one, we get a 30% share of that revenue. For every dollar they bring in, we get 30 cents. That number is across the board for all the contract fee classes. To the extent that you've got 25 people paying $2 or $50, we'll get $15. That's not enough. That's not profitable to open that center just for that class. However, if I've got four classes going at the same time, it gets really, really close. If they're operating during the hours that we're open, it's highly profitable because we're already open anyway. So everything that comes in is net revenue. So it really boils down to what can we schedule that would be contiguous times at the rec centers, and how many hours could we schedule so that we're opening up a profitable center. And we're going to do that, and my hope was if we could find someone to bring us together, we might even free up maybe some net profit. I don't know. When we finish this budget process, my goal is to sit down with the staff, as Ms. Hunt had mentioned, as you're talking about, and try to look at those centers that can generate extra revenue and see if that extra revenue is in net revenue, free and clear. We've never made that analysis before, and it will be based on how many you can actually cobble together and put within a certain time frame.
Well, just one idea, and then I'll be done with this, is it may look, if you have an average number of hours and you plan to keep the center open from a public perspective, and then there are evenings that it's closed, maybe all of the commercial or semi-commercial uses need to be bundled or bracketed to get them onto those evenings. And from my perspective, if you have four commercial classes in a small room in a rec center that is enabling you to keep the center open, and the gymnasium is now free for the public to use as a result of the four commercial uses, these come out ahead.
That's our model we're trying to work
for. But indeed, we have to direct these people, and they want Tuesday night, and I'm sorry, Tuesday night is not commercial night, you know, Wednesday night is, or whatever, and retrain them and get it to a point where they can benefit from the use of our facilities. Facilities can be open, and the community can still benefit by having free access to the rest of the facilities on those evenings.
That's exactly the model we're looking at.
I'll be waiting for my new map and new dot.
and thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. This is good.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Paul, I'll be brief. Most everything has been said. I wanted to ask you something on page 6 about the Bachman Therapeutic Center. The hours that the folks there are special folks. They come at different times and they've got special rides. And some of them do have public rides and are accustomed to getting there at the time that ride can get them there. And one of my concerns is that a person gets there early, there's no one to let them in. And they don't know what to do. Because there's years of 50 people and everything coming there. And that's one of my concerns, is that they're wandering around and don't know what's happened, where to go. Because their ride comes a certain time every day. I know one particular that comes at 9 o'clock, and now they're saying it won't be open until 10 o'clock. That person, and I call a child that isn't a child, would kind of be lost and maybe be wandering and not know what to do. So that's the concern, is that we have the hours to where they're able to get in there safely at that center. And the other idea that I think Ms. Hunt did bring up was, and that Ron's talking about, is if they're able to support the hours, they can stay open. I think that's really good if we can do that. Now on page the youth deal, the 1,700 youth, I think that's all important, that we do get to, we've got to find some way to take care of these kids that are playing the games and the leagues. Is there a way that you can use volunteers in that?
We use volunteers for coaches, but
yeah.
As far as the programming and the planning and the staffing, they're not available for that typically.
They're just
a full-time person. There's a couple full-time people doing that.
Well, I was thinking it's...
They've been great as coaches and managers. They're doing great out there.
I knew you did that. I was wondering if somebody could head up the entire league for you. Maybe you could get find a volunteer to do that. I don't know. But I think that would be great if we could do that to continue the youth programs on. The Arboretum, I think you said it dropped from 343 to 215.
Yes, sir. That's correct.
I'll tell you, they do a lot of partnershiping out there and take care of most everything they do. And I think we need to somehow find a way to help the Arboretum out there, and I'll talk to you later about that, because they do a lot. That's a nationally renowned center, and they do a lot to take care of their own facility. So I think we need to find a way to give them that amount to keep them. I think that's the operating expenses is what that goes to. Does it not?
Yes, sir.
Okay, now, did you take care of the bathhouse? Coastal Center out there.
We do not. No.
You don't?
No.
That's not part of your system.
It's part of cultural affairs.
That's part of cultural affairs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'll talk to Mary about that later. Okay, that's all I've got. Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming out.
Oh, you got yourself a tough job. You know, today there's not any grant money out there to help you. Did you get any grant money on the stimulus plan?
No, sir.
Didn't get any grant money. We're going to be looking at $7 million for the homeless and stuff, which we'll take and we'll grab it and do all that. We're going to vote on that this week, this Wednesday. Didn't get one dime. We're not just talking about it. Mary, you want to add to that?
Oh,
no.
I can't spend the homeless money on this.
I know. My point is that we did get, we're going to vote on $7 million. $7 million and we don't have one dime. What a crime scene. Jeff, you bring up a good point about that Baldwin Therapeutic Center and folks having to wait outside. It's not in my district, but I did go out there a week before last. Just take a look at it. What a jewel. What a jewel that is. You got this therapeutic pool. They keep that at a temperature, and I think the only one that's close by is Baylor Hospital. That's the only one that's close by. And you got senior citizens that go out there, because that's where they go for the arthritis and all these other things, the senior citizens, because the way they keep that temperature of that pool. I suspect you're going to have to do away with that temperature, and you're going to have to lower it, right?
We keep it on average of 83 degrees
6 months from now. They're 86 degrees. Is it going to become 80 degrees?
Actually, 86 is a little hotter than 60. Most institutions keep it because it gets uncomfortable. So 82, 83 is the norm, but there are some
things fast by it. I guess where I'm going with that, it's a therapeutic pool. That's why you keep the temperature there, because you're going to reduce the cost or reduce the temperature of the pool to save money. Is that true statement? That's what the impression I have. Maybe not.
No, sir. I wouldn't reduce it. The temperature of the pool is something we're trying to accommodate different populations. And the senior population is like at 86, and the younger population is like at 82, 83, because it's uncomfortable, so we're trying to strike a happy chord there.
Happy chord is what we need. Is, again, it's a hidden jewel that we've got. And when I use the word hidden jewel, you know, if we look around, again, we have, especially with the special needs folks, and a lot of them use that center. That's when they go out, and what Jeffy was alluding to, being in the morning with dark. There's estimated 10% of our population special needs. 10%. That's 130,000 folks that potentially use this facility. And where I'm going with that, it's a crying shame. And as we go forward, what you would hope to see is the fact that this is an asset. These are assets that we've got. And as utilizing these assets, that they become what we broadcast, we make these aware, we partnership with these groups that are out there to make them aware, to utilize those assets, and then and we might not be having a conversation about reducing ours because we'd be wanting to figure out how to add one more of these. On the youth and volunteer services, did I hear you say we will not be sunsetting the youth council?
No, sir, we will not.
So the youth council will stay in place. When we do the recreation centers, I agree when it comes to with the rest. And one of the things on page 12, we talked about one of the first priorities will be to provide after-school program Monday through Friday. Many of us are also in the Richardson Independent School District, even over in Dallas, we're in the RISD. RISD provides a very, very good after-school programs and stuff, meaning our recreation centers not only have just that 1, 2, 3, 4 kids that are there, so I want to be very careful that those, while that's very special, but I do not want to do much.
Exactly right.
Because then we have, because again, RISD does a lot for that. With that being said, we were talking about maybe other ways to help out, and some of this eventually will, down the road, will have to become more of a involvement of the private sector. I had to go off to Deion Sanders, for he started the football league, Sanders putting his money where his mouth is. Matter of fact, his football team, y'all remember the Lake Island Wildcats, the football teams that came up here and was selling the Lake Island youth football came here. And, but Deion Sanders and his teams, they played the Wildcats, they had Wildcats Stadium this past Saturday, and they're going to play them again on September the 12th. So, do what? It was a hard fought game on both sides of the ball there. Yeah. My point is that
you know, we got a class. We got a class for guys like Mr. Sanders and ones that stand up and help us out during these times like this. So that's really what I'm alluding to. And if Mr. Sanders can do it, there's other folks out there that got deep pockets that can help us out too during these times, help these kids out. So at the end of the day, we've got a lot of great centers that are out there that, you know, the skate center and stuff. At the end of the day on these things, it's all about how do you advertise, how do you broadcast it, and how do you market a lot of times. The city's not in that mindset, but again, that's the mindset that it takes to get out there and market to these things. One last thing, and Dwayne, I do agree with when it comes to making sure that things are different, regardless of what part of town they're in. Again, in the Northeast sector, and I'm going to run in District 10, I'll be specific. You know, I got two recreation centers, one swimming pool, and two libraries. That's it. And man, you talk about need. We don't talk about it a whole lot because we just don't talk about it. But the need I got, the need I have, I'll put it against anybody's need. What I got, those kids that are out there, I've heard you say over and over again about the multifamily that I've got, and they got to do something during the day too. And so I've got a huge need that's out there for these centers and such. So when we do these fees and such, and we do these programs, because every program is different, for the recreation centers, for the most part, those fees that are being collected by the recreation center, that recreation center, will it stay as that recreation center for the most part?
The fees that we collect for the recreation centers primarily, unless it's for a specific program, go back to the general fund to support our program. So the answer is yes and no. There are some specific fees for camps. If we're conducting a camp and we want to enhance that quality experience, and the parents are willing to pay small enhanced fee for that camp for that summer, yes, we'll keep that money in program fund and we'll spend that on transportation and the like.
If I had a meeting, someone comes to the recreation center, Lake Island's North Recreation Center, they have a meeting for 2 hours and they collect the $20. Does this say Lake Island's recreation center?
No, it does not.
So if they waive that fee, if they come in and they waive that fee, what happens? Then Lake Island North Recreation Center.
It doesn't matter the center, but it matters because I'll raise them. Set revenue for the department, and the revenue that we have pledged to the general fund has to come from a variety of sources. And it comes from everything from user fees, it comes from athletic fees, it comes from fees. Anything that we do that we charge a fee for, we are pledging on revenue.
As long as it's fair and balanced. In summary, we've got some tremendous assets that are out there, and we just need to broadcast them, get the folks to come, take advantage of them. I'll say one last time, what a crime change for that therapeutic center. You talk about daycare, kids, day during the day with kids out there. You go out there today and there's 60 kids out there that have special needs, and the parents are out there, and they got programs for these kids that are out there. There's people out in that pool right now that are out there swimming. They got Special Olympics that are going on. All that's going to be taken away. Not all of it, but a large majority of it. So, and same on us for not broadcasting and making that even more popular. Anyway, that's my 2 cents.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. I'm Mr.
I want to thank everyone for some really good discussion and raising some very important issues. I have a couple things that I want to clarify and a couple of comments. First, I want to emphasize Mr. Matinsky's questions about the nonprofits that are kind of like for-profits, and at some point I would like to have a small briefing on that, because I'm wondering if they're collecting so much money, could we be taking on that role and collecting the money ourselves? I mean, don't answer that now, but that's really what I'm getting at. Second is police and parks. Having been on the park board, I know that the parks are often under-policed. And what I'm wondering when I'm hearing about alcohol and trash is if we could have a little more cooperation from the police, could they help us by writing tickets? I know we may not collect the fines, but writing tickets on people who are drinking and leaving trash. Could there be more of a police presence to so that our parks are cleaner and so we don't have so much alcohol? So if we're trading out people picking up trash from the park department, could we supplement that with police whose presence would perhaps discourage the leaving of trash? And I guess I'm asking you that, Mary.
At this juncture, our focus has been on what's going on in neighborhoods and not policing the parks. And I imagine that at a point in time, when we have as more officers come on, and there might be some of that, it's probably a better role for park employees than it is for police.
Certainly it is, but since that's going to be lacking, I guess I think of the trash left in parks and drinking and bottles left in parks as the, you know, the broken window thing. It's something that really makes neighborhoods deteriorate. And I have a lot of parks in my district that are right in the middle of single-family houses, and it really has a negative effect on us. So it's something that I think we need to look a little bit more to the police, since we will be having more police and fewer park employees.
Bring this to public safety as well to discuss park and police and what we can do. We'll put it on the
committee. I think that'd be great. I wondered on page 7, what is an environmental audit and what will we be losing there on slide 7?
We're under a consent decree across the city, and also part of an EMS system that basically looks at every spill, stormwater management issues, and so we have external auditors that come in and monitor us, and so we have to do internal audits periodically to make sure that when those external audits come in that we are ready and able to pass those external audits to remain certified with our ISO 14001. So those audits are the ones that we, you know, the more presence you have and the more watching of ourselves, they're also doing when we have those external audits.
Another question. You said that even though there was a risk of 100 and something people, there were only 27 that you let go. Could you just explain that? Why were there so many vacancies?
Basically, we haven't been hiring for the last year and a half, and so we've been working on a shoestring budget and have kept our hiring to a very minimum. And so our attrition over the last couple of years has been
so you're almost at where you will ultimately need to be.
Very close, yeah.
Okay. On the children's programming on slide 13, the provides oversight staffing for 21 CDBG programs. So the CDBG programs don't pay for that?
They do not. No, they will pay for just the direct cost, but not for the indirect cost of planning. The budgetary issues and staffing for that. So.
And how many people are needed to oversee those 21 after-school programs?
Typically, monitors that go around each of the camps. So for every 4 or 5 camps, there's a monitor that travels around every day. There's also a person in charge of the budget, and then there's a couple of program people. So there's probably 4 or 5 people that do that for those.
So if we had the 4 or 5 people, we would get that. The 21 after school program.
We have those. In fact, those were reinstated, and so we have the 21. We do have the 21 CDBG. We did not have those. No, they were initially. We reduced the staffing down so far that we lost that, but we reinstated enough during the month of July to see those back up. So we do have.
Okay, so those are in.
Correct.
And the you have several references to syndicate the camp. Yes. Oversight and programming for syndicate to camp and 10 after school programs and 3 syndicate to camp campsites. What's the difference between the 14 syndicates to camp and the 3 in the next line?
Just the funding. Actually, some of the after school programs, they spill over into the summers and become year-round programs. And so about two-thirds of those after school programs are also camp programs in the summer for year-round programming. And then you have the 3 can't find. So what we couldn't find is, of course, there's not fund that's the element that we couldn't fund in the budget. The 14 campsites were restored, and those are being funded.
Okay, is it possible for you to do a little chart that would just show the current year, the coming year, the program, the number of kids to be served that are being served this year, the number under those same programs that will or won't be served next year, just side by side, because I'm trying to get a sense of what exactly are we losing. Okay? That's all, Mr. Mayor. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Steyer.
You do a good job. The city girls could not pay me sufficiently to do what you do, so thank you. On fee-based programming, particularly the point that was brought up by my good friend, Ms. Hunt, I am very skeptical of extending hours based on fee-based programming, because I think that creates discrimination. If we, and I don't think it comes out as simply as Mr. Nikinski said, if you have fee-based programming that covers the cost of operation, and you can keep the center open in the evening for that public, that's a public that is connected to people who have more discretionary income. That is not the same public as the people I'm more familiar with who do not have that same degree of discretionary income, cannot pay as much for fee-based programming, and as a result, would not get those same so-called free hours. So I am very skeptical of fee-based programming extending hours, because it does not end up working out the same throughout the city. There will be discriminatory use of staff, in my opinion. Secondly, on the hours of usage, I have now had 3 town hall meetings, and they've all been in rec centers. And Mr. Dyer, we have asked a question as to how the hours were decided, the proposed hours. And all 3 of those, I have understood that the rec center itself and the staff there had some input into what usage was there and so the hours that would be needed. Do I have a correct understanding?
Yes, ma'am, you do. And the schedule should reflect that. You see the differential across borders schedules that run the gamut depending on the community.
I am not under the impression that you did a one-size-fits-all. I'm under the impression that you did look at each center individually. And so, based on what you just said, my impression is correct. Is that right, Mr. Brown? Okay. I have also, in my town hall meetings, raised the idea of my homeowners associations and my neighborhood groups taking care of the litter. I recognize they cannot and will not do that on a forever basis, but I have encouraged them to do it on a one-time basis and to move that idea around, because I do think they will do it 1, 2, or 3 times a year. They won't do it continuously, but they will do it that way, and I can use some assistance in coordinating that, but I have gotten good reception on that idea about my neighborhood association helping with keeping the litter picked up. I'm going to say a word about Southern State. Southern State is in District 5. I happen to be the elected representative of District 5 and have been for now 3 years. Southern State was a good idea at the time. It is no longer a good idea. It is pouring good money after bad. Keeping Southern State open means putting in a significant amount of money for a small return. And I'm giving up hours on my after-school program and my senior program in my district. And I'm not fussing about that.
but I am not willing to continue pouring money into Southern States and at the same time giving up programming on the after-school programs for my kids and programming for seniors. To me, that is not a responsible use of the public funding, and the people did not elect me to imbalance the use of the scarce public funding that we have. In the Economic Development Committee meeting, one of the points that was brought up was that Southern State is used by people outside of District 5, and I understand that. It was also brought up that it's used on Friday nights. I understand both of those things. But if it's used by people outside of District 5, that means they wouldn't walk there. That means they have a car. And if they have a car, as we do in families, they can find some alternative recreation on Friday night. If the council would like to go to Southern State and State, have a good time. But it is not going to change the fact that for 5 years, the city has put money into that skating rink and it has not worked. And it will not work, and we continue to be under the federal government's oversight on that center. I live near there. I ride by there. I don't come to decisions lightly when it is in regard to either my district or the city's money. I take my time in making a decision on those things. My recommendation is, was, and remains that Southern State needs to be closed. We need to try to stop. We need to be very aggressive, but we need to stop putting money into that center. I am grateful for every council member who wishes to assist me in my efforts in District 5. But I'm the elected representative in that district. And I would ask those council members who wish to assist me to sit with me and hear me when it comes to decisions and recommendations concerning Dallas City Council District 5. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you.
This is
all. Thank you, Mayor. Paul. On page 4, on the swimming pools, I know 2 in District 2 are being closed for renovation. Just for the record again, the youth or the people that are going to want to go swimming next summer at Rawweiler and Samuel Grant, how do they get to, say, Walnut Hill or Tiki Park or another pool that's open? How will they get there?
We, at the recreation centers that don't have pools, which many of them don't, we're going to try to provide, hopefully we can get some sponsorships, but my goal is to provide a van once a week to come by the rec center, maybe twice a week, to take kids that they can sign up. Now, what that takes is, it takes parental consent, it takes the kids, you know, it takes one home, the parents come down, sign, let them ride in the van with us if that can happen. So we're going to make every effort for those centers that will kids come in and they're there for programming for the summer to give them a chance to swim at nearby pools.
It's not every day, then?
Not every day, no. In fact, most of the, if you look at some of the, most of the pools in August have very little attendance anyway, so what we're trying to do is by pumping them. Now, some of the ones in your district, and particularly those in the southwest, we have Kid Springs, Growlower, Mountain Life are all very busy pools. And so I can't close. If I close one, I need to keep the other one open nearby. And Glowwater is near.
I'm not saying that. I'm just wanting to make sure that the neighborhoods that encompass that pool, which would be Arlington Park and,
right,
and Maple Lawn, then they will be picked up in it at Glowwater. Is that what you're saying?
any kids that come to the recreation center or the, that go to Arcadia, so wherever they, if there's a center there, we have a program, then our goal is to try to give them swimming as one of the options, but it won't be every day on that.
On the Bachman Therapeutic Center, I've been getting calls recently, and they haven't been real specific, but they have concerns regarding closure on Saturday. Will you help me with that?
Again, we're trying to reduce the commitment to therapeutic programming because it's very expensive.
Is that held on Saturday?
Program itself throughout the week. Okay. I mean, on Saturdays, yes.
Including Saturdays. Okay, that may be. Okay. That answers that question. I had a telephone meeting last Thursday, and Assistant Manager Ryan Evans presented the budget. I will say that went very well, was well attended. And the two top issues were senior citizens and the reduction of hours at recreation centers, and in particular the summer camps. I think a couple of things that came out that the parents, that was definitely a serious matter. It's a big problem in those areas. I have it over in sales. And I will say, and I think Ryan will agree with me, a very emotional meeting, an emotional issue for the parents. When they talk about their parents, their kids, they talk about the organization that the kids had at the recreation, the positive influences, the activities. They complimented the staff and how they cared of their children. And you can just tell, I actually had a mother that was lying. And she goes, I'm a single mom, I've got two jobs. That's one place that I know and I feel that they're well cared for and the staff loves them. And they said, my kids would tell me if they were not well cared for, they didn't treat them right. They loved going there. And so I say, and they had really great reserves with the cuts. So I believe that about five families came regarding the Saragossa closure. Can you help me with that?
There's a Saragossa, Ignacio Saragossa on J.C., right?
Yes,
Ignacio Saragossa, there is a CBDC program, so we'll continue to have after school program. Fortunately, that was in place, and so it will be a huge impact for that center because of that federal funding. So that will stay in place.
For the summer as well?
Yes.
Okay. That wasn't quite explained at the town hall meeting.
Okay.
At the town hall meeting, there were still some questions.
Okay.
Explain to me the difference between a small center and a large center.
In the 80s, we had some populations that were isolated by immobile populations, isolated by freeways, railroads, rivers, and whatnot. And so primarily a little bit of all over the city, actually. But these particular communities received a center without a gymnasium, one that could go and recreate and have programming, and some half dozen of them that basically are there to provide services for populations you can't get elsewhere. As Mr. Nikinski pointed out, our typical recreation service center tries to reach 2 miles early area.
Mm-hmm.
These particular facilities fall within that service area. Now, having said that, there are some areas in town, I can see Mr. Nikinski, that don't quite meet this service area. But that is our master plan goal, is to get a 2 mile service area for all recreation centers.
Give me an example of a small center. Just name a couple.
Well,
just for me, for my.
Well, one of the logs was always Lundy because it's in the bottom, but the gym was built there later on, so it did stop being a small center. But Arcadia is a small center. Whether it be Johnson's a small center, Fruitdale's a small center. Fruitdale.
Okay. Now, of the 14 syndicate accounts that's being funded, three are not, correct?
Correct.
And which three are those?
I don't think we made that determination yet. We're still coming together with those. We'll come back to a list of ones that have high dependence.
Okay, and then the 10 after school programs have not been determined either?
No. We're still working on that, too.
You know, my concern...
The reason I'm setting for it, because there's such an ebb and flow, is because we fund some, BSC funds some, and so as they get ready for their after-school program for this coming year, we try to fill in the gaps with them that they may leave.
And this is my concern over by our area, and Mr. Cadena as well. We've got Daniel Grand School being closed, and then we have Saragossa also being reduced, so... That's where my concern is, that there's two adjacent areas, both are being cut from, and now that whole area, now they're going to have, you know, a few hundred kids now not having organized play, positive activities. I will tell you that they will go, I mean, just different parts of the city, and I do think that this is going to create just another negative impact, and I'm saying a crime, because we all know idle time, and there is just safety in numbers, and these kids are not going to have anything to do. In some of those areas, you know, Saragossa, some of them are formerly homeless. They definitely do not have any money to pay any type of fee for any type of organized activity. I mean, we are talking very low income. Those are some of my concerns, and I believe that's what some of the people that came to my town hall meeting on Thursday, or last week, that they were concerned about that. They were really concerned of the kids just not having anything to do in the summer. So those are my concerns. I look forward to Ms. Margolin, I am so glad that you asked for that matrix, because you have to follow it line by line, but once the matrix that Ms. Margolin has asked for, I think that will definitely help us determine what gets cut, where we are now, and then, what we will have next summer. And hopefully that will help us better understand where we need to at least do some massaging.
We want to have a comprehensive matrix for all, not just camps, but recreation center programs, all your services.
I think that would help us all and see where some
more good
and safe. And Paul, thank you so much. I know it's a hard job, but I will say a very emotional issue on all our parts when we talk to some of the parents that. I had never seen at town hall meetings, and they came, last week, because it was their kids, and our kids are our future. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Let me go to Mr. Salazar, and I know there's Alan is also one. Just
awesome. Paul?
Yes, sir.
When you close the kids program, what is 1,700 kids going to be? When 200 kids can't come to our rec center for these kids programs, when we eliminate that, what are we going to do?
There are no good choices in this. I'm just
into the point that 1,700 kids are being cut in the program, and we're also eliminating teen programs. And we're also eliminating citywide youth sports programs. And we're eliminating three syndicate to camp programs. And 10 after school programs. And we're talking about cutting down 5 hours in the Bachman Rec Center. And eliminating 10.8 full-time employees. Is that around the Bachman
Okay. Now, on Bachman, have you done a study to determine the number of people that are required to be able to handle the children with disabilities, individuals with disabilities that go to go there? In doing your staffing proposal, did you consult with any agencies to find out a minimum number of people required that need to be there?
Well, our staff are therapeutic professionals that work there, and so many people come to us to ask us, but typically it's one-on-one or one-on-two as a maximum, because kids in therapeutic programming need very special care and attention occasionally. It depends on their disability. And some levels of disability, you might have one-on-three or four or five in a class that you can watch, but it's not like 1 to 20 for able-bodied children, and it's a very intense program. That's why you see so many reductions in staff. At the same time, the hours weren't reduced that much because we're still, it wasn't the hours that was the issue, it was the one-on-one, one-on-two, one-on-three relationship with those kids and their recreation.
Right. And so you didn't do any kind of outside study or consult any agencies to ask them, you know, what they thought, or...
We didn't, because we pretty much know what the norm in the industry is, because we're one of the major therapy service providers in the city outside of some of the ones that are paid for, like Baylor and Presbyterian and some of those.
Right, and that's my point there. So this is a regional center.
That's correct.
And I had a meeting there at the Bachman Recreation Center, and they had a lot of concerns about cutting the hours, not just there, but also in, you know, cutting the hours in the Arzolans district, cutting the hours in the Coops district. The rec centers, and I got some of their members coming over to my to the rec center, and I had some people concerned in the hospital district about who use the center, who have kids and who use the center, and you know, I guess the concern is that, you know, one, you say we're four, five, and five, you don't want to be number one in crime anymore, and here we're going to cut programs with kids, 1,700 in one program. And civilized sports, I mean, have you talked to the juvenile detention center if they have room? Because, you know, if you do the odds, you know, odds are some of these kids are going to get in trouble. You know, and I don't think we're doing a service to the police department to tell them we're going to give you 200 more people to catch these 1,700 kids that we're just going to let on the street because we're not going to provide programming for them. Paul, if you have the money to restore the hours to the schools, we could do it. To the rec center?
There's not a sheet in this budget that makes me smile.
Right. But if the council would give you the funding to restore the hours of the rec centers, we could do it.
Absolutely. And she asked me in the middle, found the money, and she said, where would you put it? And I said, we went from 40 to 45. I said, recreation center, recreation center. Right. Sure, you need to go back.
Okay. You know, and you know, as respect to the budget, there's only 15 people who can vote on this budget. And they're on the horseshoe. And, you know, we do have the ability to do it. You know, and I know today there was a briefing earlier that, you know, Paul, about 11 or 12 people are saying they don't want to do it. But you can do it. You just don't want to do it. And what I'm going to be proposing are some things that will go into the budget amendments, you know, that we can do something, not to do all of it, we can do something to make sure that we help these police officers that we're hiring by not cutting programs that keep kids off the streets and in rec centers, or in libraries, or in school programs, or in teen programs. We can do it. It's a matter of, do you want to do it? Because I've listened to people in North Dallas, in Oak Cliff, and West Dallas, and they're telling me, Steve, we want you to do it. We're not elected to come in and say, I can't do it. Because you know what? There's somebody else out there who said they can do it. So let's get down and do it. And I'm not saying what we're going to do, but that's something we're going to be talking about in the next 2 or 3 weeks, how we can get this done. You know, and I've sent some requests on rest and hours and how we can, you know,
basically how you break it down into increments. So I'll look for that. And you know, if the council can earmark money for different programs citywide, and I think that's something what we're going to look for. But my message today is that, you know, we can do things. We are the city council of the city of Dallas. We can do. So I challenge each and every one of you. Paul, I think you're doing a great job. I think you're working hard. We're going to have some more discussion on the fees on the field. I'd like to know if there's any kind of if they raise the fees on the field, are they going to get more maintenance? You know, or is this just to cover the budget? If we raise the fees on the field, what more is a regular person who pays for a field rental going to get? And did we do a study on that, which I have not heard that we have, so we're going to have to continue to have more discussions on this call, because I do think that we need to make this a budget that we can work with, and that we can deliver the services that the citizens are asking for us to deliver to them. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cooper.
I just wanted to tell you one thing about the syndicated grant program. When the endowment was started for that program, the thought behind it was because there was such a budget crunch back in the mid-90s, the thought was if we could permanently put an endowment fund together that, you know, when we came to times like this, it would cover most of the cost and of the part of the grant program. And actually, except for the fact that, you know, the endowment fund has gone down substantially insofar as the very, very conservative instruments that they were invested in has gone down, just like the rest of the stock market, it has provided for a lot of camps during, yes, that's exactly right. And so I just wanted to make note of that. And to encourage people at your town hall meetings to get to that endowment fund, because the very thing that we're talking about here today, while it's not by any means the panacea for keeping kids in camp, it does provide a very useful benefit. And to the extent that you can encourage folks to send donations to that endowment fund, it really, really does help in times like this. To provide those services. Now, the endowment fund, you know, still needs about a decade of worth of generated money to get to the point, I think, where we need to be. But just wanted to point that out to folks that fund is really important as well, will really help out and encourage folks to give to that endowment fund. So it's just only a portion of the endowment fund that's spent every year to provide camps for kids, but that was a recent setup. It's set up specifically for a day like this.
Actually, the net effect of the fund is it was first started by a gentleman by the name of Phil Bates, who had a concert, and he had it at Starplex, and he made about $100,000, and he said, what would you like to do with this? And he said, let's put it into an endowment in the community foundation. And that grew to some $750,000. It's since gone back, as you mentioned, that's grew to about $400,000. But every year, as we get donations for the camp program, we take two-thirds or three-quarters and put it into camps for that year, and then we take a little bit and put it in the foundation. So the foundation is slowly growing. We need some big bumps to get it up to this foundation and be, hopefully in the future, be a self-sustainer, self-supporter of this camp program, so we don't have to look at the general fund. And I think this is a good time to get out and start beating the drum about getting some more money in that foundation. Thank you for that.
I think we've all got a couple questions, but I know Ms. Hossel and Mr. Allen want to add just something real quick. Ms. Hossel?
Yes, I did want to add on the leagues and the things that you're talking to the adult soccer leagues, Paul. We know they're not going to get more maintenance. We know they're not going to get anything in addition. So, you know, we just need to keep in mind that the adult soccer leagues are also from, you know, people who are struggling in their own finances. The second thing I have to add is the soccer league fees for adults.
Right.
We need to, we know they're not getting anything more. You know, we need to figure out how to adjust there. The second thing I want to talk about is the foundation. There is a Dallas Park Foundation, and I've been a secretary on it for several years. The Little Lil is part of it. Lois Finkelman is part of it. And I think that had we done a better job of partnering with the foundation, and you know, I take full responsibility also because I was on the council when it started. The foundation, I think, is a way to get some of these programs paid for. I think that, you know, the first thing I'm going to do when I get back is call Craig Reynolds, who's their president. But in addition to that, anyone who has money to donate, it is a 501c3. It is for the parks of the city of Dallas. And we just need to get money through there so that some of these programs can be paid for through the Park Foundation. That was what it was set up to do. We just have not done a good job of partnering with them through the city of Dallas. And as I said, I'm going to go back and talk to the other officers and see how, what we can do to finance at least one or two things. There's not enough money in there to finance everything. But we have got to do a better job of partnering and getting people to donate to the foundation for these types of things to be paid for. You know, they could have paid for seven states. They could have paid for many of these programs. Had we done a better job of partnering with them. And Paul, you know, you and I have gone back and forth on this, so we've got to come up with some donors who can give money for specific programs and harbor it through the Park Foundation.
Thank you. I agree entirely with those comments. And it goes back to the comment I was really going to address was about fee-based programming. We had some discussion on that just a little earlier. Fee-based programming and whether or not one area compared to another area is equal and should we do fee-based programming or not. But the reality of that becomes that I know at least in my district, I'm for fee-based programming because we have service groups, we have other areas that step up to the plate to help a lot of folks. That help a lot of folks. So it's, so anytime I think by not doing fee-based programming, it maybe you're limiting, and it's almost like an anchor, limiting opportunities for a whole lot of folks that are out there to help a whole lot of folks. So I am for fee-based programming.
Mr. Carroll.
Thank you, Mayor, and I'll be very brief. Let me just suggest a couple things. One, Paul, and it goes back to what Ms. Hossel was saying. I would like for us to try to figure out how we can increase the revenue for all the parks and maybe go into that foundation and like the rec center. I personally do not have a problem with a soda company having their name on the floor of a rec center. I don't know what it all entails on the inside. I don't have a problem with us trying to creatively find ways to bring back in corporate entities and dealing with naming rights that will take those dollars and subsidize those dollars back into the very programs that we're closing. I don't know if that effort, if we've really rolled up our sleeves to go and get a Gatorade to be on the backboards of all of our rec center basketball goals and what the value of that could possibly be. But certainly if those out-of-the-box type things are not being challenged or going after, then we need to formulate some type of committee. There are a czar for naming rights of the park department facilities and different things. It could be the park chairs. It could be the park benches. It could be the bottom of the swimming pool. It could be a whole lot of things. I think that we're leaving money on the table. So if indeed we don't have it, my suggestion is that we take a look at that and figure out the things that we are not doing that can help us bring back in those dollars. Earlier you said we lost a couple of sponsors. I just took a jot down or something.
Correct.
Why did we lose those sponsors?
Because the match funding required and the staffing for the programming to match their challenge is not there.
Okay. Well, and whatever the case is, I'm not in a badge of that, but I know through marketing, because that's what I do professionally.
Right.
And that is that there are some ways how feel that we can be attractive to certain entities. It could be Ben and Jerry's ice cream. I mean, any of those type things may work. And if we've not tried them, I would suggest that we figure out a way to get those things done. And in closing, let me make just one broad statement as we move forward. The zoo is in District 1 and in District 4, but the zoo belongs to the city of Dallas. And as you talked about Botman, Mr. Allen, it is not designed for those people on Northwest Highway to go and utilize Botman. But we support Botman, and we support it wholeheartedly throughout the city of Dallas. I would encourage seniors and people with those types of desires to go to Botman. The same as with the Fair Park. The Fair Park is in District 7. It is very, very dangerous, however, if indeed because it's in my district, that I shut it down away from everyone else. And I segue back to Southern Skates. Southern Skates is just like the zoo. It's just like Fair Park. It is. How many skating facilities do we have in Dallas, Paul, to our knowledge, in Dallas, Texas?
We have the one public facility.
All right. Are there any other skating rinks in anyone else's district in the city of Dallas?
Not to my knowledge.
No. Okay. Point is that when because we have taken dollars, Jerry, from your district, from Sheffield's district, and everybody else's district, and put into this Southern Skate that happens to be located in a district. The building is located in the district, but the facility is utilized Dallas-wide. I only say, let's take those things under consideration as we're speaking and as we continue to move forward, that the building is somewhere. But if because it's in my district, I choose to shut down the building and cut off the access to everybody in the city, that's too much control. Certain entities that we have under the park department, I would like to see the 5 or 10 of them set aside that we ought to be able to say, respectfully, it's in your district. Whatever goes on in Fair Park, I'm with Ms. Davis. But Ms. Davis, and I'm not trying to drag her into a fight here, and the zoo is in my district. I shouldn't have the authority to shut down the zoo because I don't like it. And Ms. Davis can't shut down the Fair Park because she doesn't like it. I think that whatever goes on there, I should be included. And whatever goes on there, she should be included. And whatever's happening with Botman, we all should be included. But it's very, very dangerous when we decide to take a look at something that we may not like and we take it away from the entire community. I have a major and real problem with that. I'm going to stop.
Paul, a couple things, just, and it's on the fees, we've talked a little bit. On the golf, on the green fees, you're not proposing an increase on those, correct?
We increased those in April, and we're up to market on those, and pretty much, again, the golf breaks even on a very thin margin, and the customers have a lot of choices in the Metroplex, so we're very cognizant of what that margin is and what the product is as far as providing.
Okay, let me, I cut off Mr. Atkins, I didn't mean to.
Paul, you know, we look at everything, and my main concern, Mary, is that you, as a city manager, you recommend to us the budget, you know, what is, how to balance the budget. Then when you make the recommendation, then you send that to Paul and say, Paul, this is your recommendation to balance the budget for the cut in the parks department. Is that a fair question?
I don't tell Paul where to cut. I tell him
you know, this is about how much money we have, and he may come back and say, I need more, and but there's not a lot across the scope.
So therefore, these cuts, you know, we're talking about 17 youths going to get cut, the senior program, the park and recreation hours, those items. As a city manager, you do not recommend those cuts. If Paul recommends those cuts back to you, I'm just trying to get a high due to process for it.
Well, technically, Paul recommends them to me. We do have some back and forth about if I tell him I think one's really bad or back and forth, but he recommends them to me.
The reason why I say that, Collie, is, you know, we are the council, and number one, we have a commitment to our citizens, especially the youth, Paul, and to the seniors. And remember, you know, seniors is people in the past, and the youth is our future. But Paul, if I was director, and I came up for Park and Rec, without Recreation Center, I'd probably be locked up, probably dead today. And I said the first statement that I came from a single parent. Five boys, one girl, and all boys living, and my sister has passed away. But by saying that, I keep hearing that what my colleague Steve Salazar said, what's going to happen to those 17 youth? 1,700. Where are they going to go? And we start out with this budget, closing our record center on Saturday. Tom Allen, you know, Fireside, Cleaver, Riley, but the community said, put the record center back, and you did put it back. And by doing this, Paul, seniors is very important. And what I think is, I hope everyone still have a grandmother or some senior person still living, and then pull back those ones who take care of the youth. You know, when the parents are going to work, the seniors take care of the youth. And that's something we got to consider. But I don't know how we do it, but I would like for you to bring to me a line item. What would it take to put back the senior program? What would it take to put back the 1,700 program, your 1,700 students that you cut, the youth that you cut? A number. We need to deal with what is going to help us and going to help the city. And I guarantee you, those 17 youth that you closed or had nothing to do with, they are going to create crime because they do not have anything to do. Jerry, you know, the Wildcat Jerry, if you got a kid 14, 15 years old, and as a day you see them on a corner, they're not going to be a Wildcat. They're not going to be at the gym. They're going to find something else to do. And it's our obligation here to make sure that you can take care of, and especially single citizens. Now, as an elected official, probably 75% of my voters vote for me as senior. And if I don't talk about them, I guarantee I won't be here the next 2 years. And we can either find some kind of way and roll our sleeves up. And that'll direct the power. It's your obligation, not the city manager, because she said she gives to you. So I'm putting the blame on you because you should make sure that the senior program is taken care of and the youth. I'm talking about those two programs. Give me a line on how much it's going to cost and get back with me. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. On the fees, on the field fees, do we differentiate between a City of Dallas resident and a ball team or individuals that come from outside of Dallas?
No, sir, we don't. It's almost impossible to legislate because someone will come get the fee, and there may be half the team may be from Garland, half may be from City of Dallas.
Do you have any idea? I know that there are some teams and activities that come from outside Dallas. Do you have any sense? Is this 10% or 50%?
I really don't. The only thing we've been trying, we tried, our resident fees are for the Recreation Center use cards. We know who they are. They're registered in a class system.
Discounted golf.
Sir?
Discounted golf.
No, sir. Because without those populations outside, we wouldn't be able to break even. And some of the cities that went to non-resident fees have realized golf is sort of a universal package, and so people travel around every weekend to go to different places. If you go to resident fee, you'll lose a lot of play and a lot of revenue, so it stops breaking even. We've tried that in years past, and it didn't work.
Well, I'd like you to look at, again, they may not be the source of it, but if you look at them in terms of that and also the differentiation and a wider spread on the weekends versus the days and those sorts of things. Again, I think on some of these, if you know, we're not going to find in this budget tens of millions of difference. It's going
right.
to be a lot of things that are adding up to, you know, a couple hundred thousand here and maybe 50,000 here and that sort of thing. So if you can even fine tweak those fees on either the golf, the fields, those sorts of things, it could be a big help to us.
Okay.
Okay. There was mention on the zoo feed, and I just want to go back through that. My understanding is, and if I remember right, I may not, on August 5th, when you did that briefing, you pointed out that the fees would be the responsibility of DZM. Is that correct?
Correct, yes.
Okay. And even if we held on to the zoo, we would have changed fees. Is that fair to say?
That's true, yes.
Okay. And if we would have changed those fees, that would have affected the numbers that you gave out earlier. Is that correct?
If we changed the fees, the formula would have given the general fund about $200,000 out of that $900,000. We would have still had about a $4.5 million deficit.
Right.
That
right.
So that $4.5 million freed up a lot of things that we didn't have to reduce in libraries and parks and other things.
Including a lot of fees and those as well as other things. My understanding is those don't all come to the council. Is that right? They go to the park board.
They have it in the past. No, so we've talked about that before, and that's, again, we've been going for about 3 weeks and about 12 or 14 hours of discussion
and
committee.
And if those came to the council, I mean, if you think of all of the fees, and I'm just thinking everything from the green fees that we've talked about to zoo fees and everything else, any sense of how many fees would be coming to the council? I mean, it'd be a reasonably large number, right?
There's probably 14 or 15 zoo fees. There's probably 12 or 15 golf fees for twilight, post-twilight, seniors, you know, everything we have.
I guess the only thing I'm pointing out is there's a lot of those pieces. If we want to take some of those on, it means that we're opening up a little bit of a hornet's nest. There's going to be a lot of things to take on, too. And historically, we haven't done that.
Correct.
Okay. Okay. Appreciate it very much. Thanks.
Since you kind of answered to me, my question about the zoo was not the fees. My question was about there was a management contract, and the management contract do not come up all the time. We turned the management over to the private company for the zoo as a contract. I would ask those fees for that one particular contract, not all fees. And it's very simple. How many times, Paul, have we turned over a public facility in the park and recreation to the city that came with a management contract? How many management contracts have you came to the city council that we give over to the private sector in the last 10 years?
Well, our reading predates that. The Texas Discovery Garden, Cedar Ridge Preserve, to Arlington Hall, probably a dozen.
A dozen, Trudy. Mayor, we're not talking that many. That's what my point
is. The only thing I'd point out, and again, I understand where you're going, is I just want to be real careful that we don't build an expectation of a lot of the contracts. Because if we did that, I think as we talked about before, we would end up with thousands of pages.
Wait, Mayor, I understand that, Mayor, but $1 million worth of fees. I just want to know that we did give up $1 million of fees. Even though we went to the zoo, we had a deficit of $5 million or $4.7 million. My point was $1 million came up, and I did not see the management contract.
And
if I saw the management contract, and I didn't know the proposed fees were going back to the park department, I would have brought the issue up. But as a council, my main reason is concerned about how do those contracts come up, and how do we manage those contracts. We don't do it all the time.
Right.
Okay. And there's been a lot of suggestions as we've gone through to additional programs to add in changes and that sort of thing. Well, restore, that's fine, that's a better word.
Yeah.
But as we go through, I think it's still incumbent upon us to ask if we restore those, put those back, whatever word we want to use, where do those monies come from? Because we haven't thrown a lot of suggestions out. And that's fine, but we need to put it down. Whatever the suggestion may be, all I'm urging all of us is when we're saying restore this or restore that, and I've kind of played with some numbers of some opportunities in going through it, but we need to all do that. So if we put forward X, then where is it going to be made up from? Because this is a zero-sum game. And I would tell you, and I think a number of us have talked about, we're real concerned. It's easy to look at the tax increase, but the challenge with that is we are a city that is dependent on bringing in business and bringing in people. We don't have the natural growth that Frisco and some of those other places have. So when we do those sorts of things, we get on pretty shaky ground on some of those things. So I think it's incumbent upon all of us, and I've tried to done some worksheets here that says here's some ideas. They may or may not be good ones, but here's some ideas. And I think it's just all incumbent upon us when we say, let's restore, where does this come from? Okay. okay? We've got a recess now. We can get it when you come back. We've got a recess because I know a number of people are committed. There is CNG vehicle that a number of people want to see. That's at noon. We'll go ahead and do that, have lunch. Why don't we count it coming back at 1:15? I'll pick up any miscellaneous questions, then we'll go in. We've still got one more briefing that we're going to have to hit today. So that'll get us down there and then back in, hopefully in the 1:15 range.
Sure.
I think you're fine. I will ask Jerry and Ron to be the ones that coordinate as we pull all the pieces together and do the juggling expenses. It's going to be two of them. But again, the freedom for everybody to make the suggestion, that falls on all of us.
Our Streets Director, Kelly High, will be making his presentation this afternoon. I will remind you that the Streets Department works on the maintenance of streets. The capital side of the streets, the bond program side, is done by Public Works, and we'll have that conversation with you a little bit later. One of the good things about the street budget is we've been able to, the cuts in this department, due to the hiring freeze and due to the approach that we're going to take, have been very few, and they've been largely administrative. We're looking at we need to maintain this workforce because if we have storms or other incidents that we need to have this workforce to work. So in addition to working on the streets, we're going to work for ourselves, for water and for CDBG, and you will see that reflected in this budget. And Kelly?
Honorable Mayor and members of the City Council, my name is Kelly High. I'm the Director of the Department of Street Services, and I'll be presenting our proposed 09-10 budget for next year. If you go to slide 2, I'll give you a brief budget overview or briefing overview. We're going to talk a little bit about the budget summary, breakdown of the budget by services. I'll give you a brief department overview, talk a little bit about the scopes of services, what it is that we're responsible for in the Department of Street Services, talk a little bit about the key budget considerations that we went through, management went through when developing the budget, and then talk about the 09-10 proposed services. On slide 3, you'll see a breakdown of the department's budget, the 08-09 budget, and the proposed 09-10 budget by business unit within the department. One thing to note is that the flood control division that's mentioned there, that is proposed to be consolidated with the Trinity Watershed Management Department for next year, so you won't see that there for 09-10. On slide 4, as we talked about earlier, next year we're proposing a $38.4 million budget for the department with some 487 FTEs. Essentially, the department is broken down into 4 business units. Our largest division, our street repair division, which is responsible for our heavy construction in the department, is broken down into asphalt and concrete. We also have service maintenance areas, and they're located geographically throughout the city, and they're responsible for our daily maintenance, routine maintenance operations. And then we have some right-of-way maintenance contracts, and in our inspection group that's associated with those contracts, and it's also associated with the work that we do in-house. On slide 5, this is our scope of services in the department. Essentially, the major inventory items that we're responsible for, some 11,500 lane miles of streets in the city, 1,350 miles of alleys, also responsible for about 60,000 stormwater inlets in the city, roadside drainage and guardrail as well. We are also, it is important to note, one of the primary responders for severe weather events in the city of Dallas, snow and ice response as it relates to sanding operations, also high wind damage and flooding, and then removal of debris that gets in the roadway as well. We provide that service 24 hours, 7 days a week. As I talked about earlier, some of the budget development considerations that we went through, one, as we looked at our budget and what services might be impacted, we want to make sure that we maintained our core services in the department. We also wanted to make sure that we limited the long-term impact on street conditions, essentially choosing things that if we didn't do them for a couple of years that we'd be okay, but we didn't want to do them long-term, so we were mindful of that. Also wanted to be able to maintain our presence for emergency response capabilities and then be prepared for economic recovery when that occurs. On slide 7, this is the Street Repair Division's asphalt component, proposing a $10.2 million budget for that next year. I must note on the major budget changes, we do have a reduction in services for this division. We're proposing to reduce the street rehabilitation program by some 40% from 30 lane miles to 18 lane miles next year. I'll get into some pictures earlier, a little bit later on, that'll kind of show you what these treatments are when I'm talking about them. So what that leaves for the 09-10 budget for the asphalt division, we're still going to continue, or we're going to continue to do 18 lane miles of street rehabilitation, 10 lane miles of street restoration, and continue with our full depth asphalt repair and level up repairs as well. As noted earlier in our budget considerations, one of the things that we wanted to make sure that we did was maintain staff, and as Mary mentioned, maintain staff for emergency response capabilities and to be ready for that recovery. So in the asphalt division, we're proposing to do about $1.4 million worth of work for other departments. Essentially, we do the work for them, specifically for paving improvements for the Neighborhood Investment Program, and do some work for Park and Recreation as well. On the next slide, you'll see there's some pictures of the programs that we talked about. The rehabilitation program, which is your top left slide or top left picture, that's the program that will be reduced next year. Street rehabilitation is a program that's done on asphalt streets. Typically, the street's in decondition, but it's not to the state that it needs to be reconstructed. So we'll go in and oftentimes mill off that top surface, do the base repair, and then come back in with an overlay. We also do street restoration, which is the equivalent of reconstruction on an asphalt street. And so that, when we refer to restoration, we're talking about having to completely redo an asphalt street. And you'll see some pictures there. The end product, the overlay, is the same for both the rehab and the restoration. You can kind of see that in your bottom left picture. On slide 9, this is our concrete division and street repair. One of the major budget changes, and it's pretty significant, is that we are proposing to eliminate the partial reconstruction program next year, taking that from 31 lane miles down to zero. There are a couple of different programs in concrete repair. The partial reconstruction is where we're essentially going in and rehabbing several segments of concrete streets. That's the portion that will be eliminated. We will still maintain, as you see in the 09-10 services, our just localized concrete repairs. We'll still continue to do some curb and gutter. That's for things like drainage problems or hazards, and then some associated sidewalk repair as well. Just like with the asphalt services, we're proposing to maintain our folks in-house by doing about $2.5 million worth of concrete improvements for other departments, again, the NIP program, the Neighborhood Investment Program, and to do barrier-free ramps and sidewalks for public works. And you'll see some pictures on slide 10 of the partial reconstruction work. You can see that's some pretty significant, oftentimes the curb and gutter and sidewalks as well, in fairly big stretches. It's a little bigger than localized repairs, and you can see the bottom left corners where we're doing curb and gutter work at a lead walk, where you might have a hazard at a lead walk. You're going to repair that curb and gutter, and then you're going to repair that lead walk as well. On slide 11, this is our service maintenance areas. Again, responsible for the daily maintenance needs throughout the city, the routine operations, kind of the quick fix stuff that we can do. Proposing a $12.6 million budget for that program next year. One of the significant changes is we currently have 5 service maintenance areas in the city, one in each quadrant of the city and one in the central city. We are realigning that from 5 to 4, and so we'll maintain a presence in each quadrant of the city, northeast, northwest, southeast, and southwest. That does come with a net reduction of about 26 positions. About half of those are administrative and customer service staff. The other half is maintenance crews. And so we will probably experience a little bit longer response time to our service request as it relates to that realignment. Additionally, within the service maintenance areas is where we have our Momentum program. The Momentum program, as many of you may know, is the adoption, a median adoption program that we have in the city. We're proposing to eliminate the cost-sharing component of that program. Right now, if homeowners associations, business groups want to adopt a median and beautify it, we will reimburse them up to half, or reimburse them half the cost, up to $10,000 to do that. As part of this proposal, we're proposing to eliminate that cost-sharing component. Folks can still adopt the medians, we just won't have the cost-sharing component. So what's left proposed for the service maintenance areas, we're going to continue to do the pothole repair as we currently do, still provide inlet cleaning services and inlet inspection, continue to do the roadside drainage and right-of-way stuff, and the guardrail repair. Also within the service maintenance areas, we have a nights division. As I mentioned earlier, we are 24/7 operation. Part of the nights division's responsibilities is to sweep the central business district 5 nights a week. They do that Wednesday through Sunday. That will continue. and they will also be there to respond in the overnight hours, on weekends, and on holidays to debris that gets into the roadway. Debris in the roadway is actually one of the number one service requests for the department, so it's pretty essential that we have a 24/7 coverage there. And you'll see on slide 13 some of the pictures of the things that they do in the service maintenance area, the quick stuff that we do. On slide 14, you'll see our right-of-way maintenance contracts and inspections division. We have some pretty significant changes in this division for next year. We're still proposing a $4.3 million budget, but we are reducing several things. One of them is we're reducing the mowing cycles from a 21 cycles that we have now down to 18. What that means is currently we have a customized approach to how we do our median mowing. And so in the heavy growing season, we're mowing once every 10 days. In the normal growing season, we're mowing once every 14 days. And in the drier months, every 21 days. And so that's the program we have now with 21 cycles. We're going to eliminate three cycles, and that's essentially going to put us on a 14-day mowing cycle pattern. Associated with that mowing contract, there's some off-season work that we do in relation to that. So when we're not mowing the medians in the off-season, we have some hand work that's associated with that, pruning of crepe myrtles, pruning of the red-tipped petunias, some of those things that grow out into the sidewalk area or might grow out into the lane of traffic. We've tried to be pretty proactive about that over the last several years. Now that will be provided on a response basis only by our service maintenance areas. And again, a program that I should mention was litter removal program that was added a couple of years ago that provides litter in the off-season. That has been proposed to be eliminated. One of our biggest preventative maintenance programs, the slurry seal and micro-surfacing program, is proposed to be eliminated next year as well, taking that from 175 lane miles down to zero. And then again, we're going to be eliminating the positions or inspector positions that are associated with that program. So what we'll continue to do on slide 15, we're going to continue to mow the medians once every 14 days. We mow some 1,660 acres each cycle. We're going to do that 18 times next year. There's some 2,200 lane or gutter miles of street sweeping that we do. We'll still continue to do that on the major thoroughfares 12 times next year and once a month. And we'll continue our inspection program both internally and for our contracts. You see on slide 16 some of the pictures that are associated with it. The bottom two pictures are slurry seal and micro seal. Oftentimes people confuse those with resurfacing projects. We essentially do slurry seal and micro surfacing on streets that are in good condition. And so they're preventative in nature. So it's a good condition street. We'll come in with this slurry seal treatment to keep it in good condition and kind of preserve its life. So that's what the slurry seal program is and the micro surfacing. On page 17, the Flood Protection Service, as I said earlier, this program is proposed to be consolidated with the Trinity Watershed Management for next year. And with that, we have an appendix that we have some street services, annual O&M lane miles, kind of a comparison over the last 2 years, the number of O&M lane miles that we've done and what we're proposing to do for the next fiscal year. Talked a little bit about the history of street satisfactory rating. That's in your appendix as well. Gave you a treatment description. And then on the last page is kind of our cost to restore services. Some of those things that I mentioned that were cut, the cost to restore those. And with that, I'll take your questions.
Thank you, Mayor. And let me just see. Kelly, very good presentation. Even though we're cutting back, I want to just make a quick statement of something. And one is in reference to what you're saying, but a suggestion, and it's probably something that Forrest can take into code as related to these vacant lots. But you're talking about more in the medium, so I came over just this morning. Is it possible, and Mary, that in mowing and when we knock down these lots, that we can scrape that lot, and would it be a cost saving if we scraped the lot and turned it over where you till it where grass cannot grow, okay, for a while, and we till them versus trying to go back and repeatedly cut them and where you have the tall weeds and all that different stuff?
We'll look at that. I don't think that'd be a savings ultimately, but let's see what.
Mark, you kind of know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, but don't say that. Yeah.
I'm not saying about that.
I'll
go with the tractor. I have a lot. And yeah.
Yeah, once. It buys you a few more weeks once, and after that, you kind of tilled up the soil and it grows even better. Digging around in the dirt. So.
All right, well, I'll say
that. We have to keep mowing. That's what
we have to figure out something. And the reason, because we have those tall weeds. Now, back to you and the mediums and things that our neighbors are unaware of, and that is our association with TxDOT. Because a lot of the mediums and things that you are mowing as you approach 35, 67, 75, we do our part, but TxDOT, they are responsible for certain areas, but the community look at the council person and saying, that's in your district and all these high weeds. Do we have an association, or is it something we can do with TxDOT to help get them on their job?
I know that we've had TxDOT come up here and brief council, or at least in committee, in the past, and so you're right. You know, we're mowing 18 times a year or 21 times a year as we are currently, and TxDOT's on a 2 to 4 time a year cycle, and so you do see a pretty significant difference. But there's currently nothing in the works to get them to mow further, because my recollection was we mow 1,600 acres. I feel like they had somewhere around 4,000 acres to mow, and so I think it would just require more money from TxDOT in Austin.
All right, I think Ms. Cooper's going to speak to something in the moment about that. She just kind of waved over. But certainly I want to make sure, because aesthetically, the neighbors and our folks in Dallas are mad when they see high weeds, and if they saw fewer high weeds, maybe it would take some of the pressure and would allow they'd be a little bit more tolerant with some of the other things, but just wanted to say that. And then last, when you talk about sweeping, I just love to include in our sweeping program the Cedar Crest Martin Luther King Bridge. It just has to be swept. However we can put that on there, that has to be something that's consistent because of the glass, the weeds, the trash that's on that bridge.
Yes, sir.
It's just, you know what it is. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hutchman.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Very good presentation, and thank you especially for the appendix at the end that explains what it would cost to restore, because I think that'll be helpful to us and Mary, I think, in all of our presentations. If we make sure we put that in, it's very, very helpful to us. Looking at the slurry seal and the micro surfacing, based on the calendar you provided us, we have not done slurry seal and microsurfacing in the current budget year, correct?
That's correct. The slurry seal and microsurfacing, just as it is in 09-10, was cut as part of this year's cutbacks.
And let's see. If we can go to page 19, we have a I think this is a very helpful graph for us, because it really shows us where we're investing and where we're not investing. Because the slurry seal, last year we did 125 lane miles of slurry and 50 miles of microsurfacing. This year we didn't do any of those, and next year we're thinking about not doing any of those. And that, I'm not sure if you did this, but it's you might want to explain it a little bit more. It's about a quarter inch of asphalt that can go on top of a street, and it just kind of evens out a street that might have some quick fixes on it, some cuts in it.
Right. We use the slurry seal and micro surfacing program on streets that are probably in B condition. They're in relatively good condition. They might need some crack sealing that needs to be done prior. They might need to have some potholes repaired, but very few of them. And so we'll do that crack sealing and pothole repair, and then we'll come in, and it's about a quarter inch treatment, aggregate treatment, that we put in on top of it and then seals it. It seals it, provides a good riding surface, and it also provides additional traction as well back to that street surface. So it performs several functions.
Does it extend the life of the street?
Yes, ma'am. That's one of its major roles, is to, you know, water infiltration is one of the biggest problems for streets, and so we're sealing that street, and it keeps that water infiltration from occurring and prolongs its life. It's about a 7-year treatment, 5 to 7.
Are we being penny wise and pound foolish by failing to do the slurry seal and microsurfacing 2 years in a row? Because, in other words, are we going to end up 3 years from now with much more damage to our streets that's much more costly than it would have been had we simply done the microseal and slurry seal now?
I think it's like any of these programs, and micro and slurry as well, and Mary's mentioned it. It's one of those things that we can probably get away with if we just stop it for a couple of years. It's not that there's zero impact, but if we don't do it for a couple of years, maybe we're okay, but it certainly has to get restored.
I'm a little nervous because this is year two. And this to me is
that should be the end.
That's the end of it. I'm afraid though, Mary, that next year's budget is going to be worse than this year's. And what we might consider doing is doing the slurry seal and microsurfacing this year, not doing it next year. You know, kind of doing it almost every other year so that we're getting some level of maintenance. I just worry that 2 years in a row, most likely 3 years in a row, we're going to be in real trouble. So that's something I'm going to be looking for, again, finding money for. We're trying to squeeze blood out of a turnip here. I understand that. But I really think long-term, that in particular is going to have a negative impact. So that's, colleagues, that's something I'm going to be trying to find some money for. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Ms. Salazar, please.
With respect to, for example, the bond program, I mean, can you kind of give the council an idea how much percentage-wise of the bond when you construct streets, sidewalks, curbs, and gutters, how much is done in-house and how much is contracted out?
Now, he doesn't do the bond program stuff. Public Works does. And actually, we're spending more on streets on the bond program side this year than we did last year.
Right.
So, but
almost
all of it is contracted out.
Does it have to be contracted out?
It doesn't have to be contracted out, but it's such a large number. I assume your question is, could streets do more of that work as opposed to contracting it out?
Right.
If we had a large enough staff, and so, but
you're cutting your staff right now. I'm trying to give you a way to save money.
Right. And one of the things that we're doing in here, and Ben, if you could go back to slide 7 and slide 9, and I might not have made this very clear, on the $1.4 million worth of improvements that we're doing for other departments, that's basically what we're doing. We had a cut in our street rehabilitation program. We're reducing that, and there would be an associated staffing reduction with it. In order to not reduce those staff members and able to keep ourselves available for emergency response, we're going to do $1.4 million worth of work for the Neighborhood Investment Program and Park and Recreation. And then on slide 9 was kind of the same thing. Where we are going to be doing sidewalks and barrier-free ramps for public works. Yes.
Now, Kelly, the only risks Kelly had were a couple of administrative
people. Well, I just want to make that clarification up and appreciate that because I think that was a concern a couple of weeks ago where you might be doing something, and I think what you've done is just reorganized and to be able to meet other needs with the people that you have. And I want to thank you for that. That's a good job. That's good looking out. But I think, you know, looking, you know, future-wise, you know, where we're doing, you know, some of the criticisms I've heard, and you know, is that sometimes, you know, we do have private contractors that don't get the job done right, and our street people are the ones that have to go back in and fix them. So what I'd like for this year is just kind of go look at those situations where they've come up and see if there's any recommendations. You'll come back to the council at some point in the future with respect to maybe recommendations on certain types of jobs that we do a better job of anybody else because we know these streets, we've been working them for so long, and we have people that have been working them so long that maybe they can do the best job out of anybody than someone coming from the outside having to basically become re-educated and doing a street. I'll give a great example. You know, Singleton Boulevard, you know, Lord help us if we ever have to repave that thing again. You wouldn't know how many times that they had a stop work because they found a gas line or old gas lines. At one point, West Dallas was covered by gas stations. And, you know, and that job just took so much longer. And the people in-house are the ones that actually will have to go back in. And, you know, if we have a new contractor coming in and doesn't have the history, it just makes the job a lot more difficult. So, but I appreciate what your recommendations are. If we could save more lane miles, I think we made a goal. It used to be a 2,000 2010 goal, and we're getting to 2010, and we haven't met the goal of our streets repairs and maintenance. And I would say that District 6, and I know is probably the one of those that needs a lot of that work. And unfortunately, there is a nip in one in part of the district, not all of it. It's just like maybe six blocks. But just keep thinking outside the box like you did as far as reorganization. I think that's going to help us in the long run.
Thank you very much, Mr. Atkins, please.
Thank you, Mayor. I guess there was a chart that we got last year, the comparison to street to the other district. Do you still have that?
We can update it for you and get it to you. Street conditions by district.
Yeah, by district. Okay. And I just want to know that what we do not do this next year budget, that what would be the district, the difference in the repair of the street condition. Would there be a big different area? Because number one, I know some district is very, very low. I think seeing you see stuff kind of low.
Overall, we've made our 2010 goal as an average over the city, but some districts have not. And some districts are higher and some districts are lower. We'll get you that information.
Okay. I would like to have that. Also, Mr. Caraway, what we did on the text op on the task board on Highway 67. But, Mayor, anyway, to get update, Linda, on TxDOT with the Mayor Task Force, what we did was that one of our areas, what they did, they called TxDOT, and what they did, they volunteered. So what they did, said TxDOT said, we will do 2 or 3 years improvement of the intraway, and we take over. So they're working. And also in Siegelville, we have a relationship with Siegelville and Cleveland Riley on our 20th TxDOT, and we take care of our part, they would take care of the part. And so what I would encourage all the council people to do is your state representatives and people who got a good voice down there with TxDOT, and instead of where that entryway, that gateway, like on 20, 67, 35, and all of those gateways, that we got to encourage TxDOT to really show a hand in this. I know that some of the other suburbs, they just pay for it, but they don't get reimbursed. But what we got to do is try to make sure TxDOT is hold accountable for. Lynn, I think you have been working with me for the last couple of years on doing that, but we still got to, keep the hand to the fire. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Cooper.
Right, and that's right, Councilman Atkins. They have a pilot program. It should be starting fairly soon here in Dallas. I think it's the only way in the state that they're going to do it. And it's true that it's 4 mowings a year, whether it needs it or not. That's a joke. but what they're going to do is take a 3-year period, like you were saying. They're going to take this 3-year period, and they're going to hire a contractor to do it. And they're going to base it not on 4 times a year, but in that area they're going to base it on like 18 inches, I think. So when it gets to 18 inches, they've got to cut it. And what they're thinking is, over the period of 3 years, that they can make it work financially by using a contractor to do the mowing and mowing it every 18 inches rather than just coming out and mowing it 4 times a year during you really don't know when they're going to mow it. It's just supposed to be 4 times a year. So what they think is by spreading it out over 3 years, they're going to be able to keep it only to 18 inches or below. And once they've evaluated that over the pilot program over a series of growing seasons, then if that works out and it looks better, they're going to call it a success and do it in other parts of the state. But, you might, I was just thinking about it, I was going to bring it up because of what Dwayne said. I mean, you might just consider, getting someone to mow those lots when they get to 18 inches. Would it be cheaper to do that, or is it better to send out a city crew every time a council member gets so upset because they're high? I mean, really. I mean, think about it. That they're required to come out and mow it every 18 inches. I don't know if it would be better or not. I mean, maybe it is. I mean, we won't even know if the TxDOT program works until, for a year or two.
Yeah,
but
that would be something to look at.
Yeah, I think so. Then I was going to talk just a second about the micro surfacing and the slurry seal. Yeah, I agree. It's going to be a mistake in the long run not to do those two programs. I'm not sure how to get away you know, regain the budget savings on it. But if it's 125 miles, lane miles, of slurry seal a year, the percentage of that over total lane miles that would need slurry sealing, what would that be? Not total lane miles in the whole city, but lane miles that would need to have slurry seal on it during a year, or just take a three-year period, because we didn't have it last year, we didn't have it this year, and then next year.
You know, we probably need to get that for you in our next set of questions for Friday. We'll just be sure we have that.
You know, I was just wondering, like, is it 10% of those roads that need it get it? And if it's not, and if we can figure it out, say it's 100 lane miles in a 3-year period, then, you know, it would be more effective to address that on a 3-year period, how we're going to get those 100 lane miles that are up and due, how we're going to do that within that 3-year period. I mean, I think that would be a more effective way to look at it.
I suspect it's more than 125.
Oh, I'm sure it is,
yeah.
But I'm just saying, you know, you really need to look at it, like Ms. Hunt was saying, over an average of several years.
I'm just saying, my guess would be it's probably twice that.
Right.
Easy.
But
even over years.
Right, but back to my point is, if you have that 200 over 3 years, okay, and you weren't going to address it in year one, year two, but you had to address it in 3 years, the third year out, okay, to make that decision as a council, to say, we're not going to let this slide more than 3 years.
Right.
Because then the maintenance cost more than it would have to do it within that 3-year period. I mean, that's the way I would have looked at it. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Kelly, a couple questions. On slide, I think it's 4. You talk about breaking down into 4 business units from what you currently have?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And just very briefly, see if you can tell me why asphalt and concrete couldn't be rolled into one. I mean, I know they're different materials, but, you know, if they're both repairs, it, from my perspective, and you're the street expert, they seem to sort of be in the same general business thing. There's certainly difference in maintenance and the right-of-way contract.
Right. From an administrative perspective, it's one business unit. And so, but in practicality, they're separate crews for the separate work. And so we don't have two administrative business units, one administrating the asphalt and one the concrete.
So they're one division, and just one guy goes out in an asphalt truck and one goes out with concrete saws.
Yeah, very different. They're very different operations, different crews, different sets. They're set up very differently, and so they're broken down. The asphalt folks, that's what they do, and that's what they're good at. And then the concrete folks, that's what they do. And even the concrete and asphalt folks are broken down into different subdivisions based on the type of work they do, whether it's restoration or rehab.
Is there one administrative group that's responsible for the calls and follow up and so forth? Because both of them are repairs.
Right. Well, a couple of things. Again, this is the heavy construction division, but when calls come in from the citizens, the primary intake for calls for service request and all of that is through those service maintenance areas that I talked about. They're the primary intake, and so they're the ones that are going to kind of do that initial investigation, and then once they determine that they can either handle it with a pothole repair or with a patch truck, they'll do it. If not, it gets shipped over to the street repair division for them to repair. And so all the kind of citizen contact takes place in those geographic service maintenance areas, so they kind of have that hands-on one-to-one with the citizens. I'm not sure if I answered that right.
No, that's all right. I'm just tossing it out there to see if it's not any extra money we could save by. If you've already looked at it, that's fine. On page 14, you know, the mowing and so forth, I just have to ask this because I told a citizen in my district that I would ask it. And he says, you know, if you guys are that tight for money, why don't you just let them mow the grass one time, mow an edge the next? Or, in other words, instead of doing a full mow edge and then also blowing everything down our sewers with the blowers later, we sort of want to, you know, lead by example. And since we're doing illegal things, it doesn't set a good... I'm editorializing here now. Who's in charge of stormwater? Are you listening? Nobody cares. Oh. the ever ominous city attorney. All right, hello? let me stop at the mowing and edging. Is that something that could, you know, save us? I mean, if it saved us 10% or 20% or something. And his attitude was, yeah, I need you to mow the grass. I know you're tight, but, you know, I can live without a certain amount of edging. But you know, so just an idea. You don't have to.
We'll take a look at it. I know that that's something we're actually pretty proud of that we got instituted several years ago that I personally thought once we added that component to that contract, it was going to raise the prices astronomical. I mean, I just thought we wouldn't be able to afford it. The prices actually came in pretty competitive, and I think one of the things with edging is that once you get an edge established, it's much easier every time you do it.
So we should get a discount after that.
Maybe so. But we'll look into that. All right. We can talk about that. We're going to be rebidding that contract this fall, so we'll look into some of those ideas.
And at the same time, and Ms. Coop is reminding me to make sure they don't blow it down the street, right?
Yes, sir.
Along those same lines, and I don't know what we do. We had a long, dry summer. Obviously, a lot of the grass on a lot of the medians and parkways and things didn't need cutting because it's basically dead or dormant or whatever it is. What do we do in a case like that? It seems to me that the crew is on a cycle. Is the contract such that we can't in some way monitor that and say, look, when the guy shows up, he gets a few bucks for at least going out and making sure it didn't need cutting, and we save that amount of money?
That's really how we have the current contract structured. Like I talked about, in the heavy growing season, we're mowing it every 10 days. In the drier months, it's every 21 days. And so,
So effectively, you're doing it.
Effectively, we're doing it. Next year, with a proposal by cutting back the number of cycles, we're going to a strict 14-day cycle. And so, as I said earlier, when we look at bidding this contract out, I think what the contractors get is some economy of scale. And so, if we want that flexibility with less cycles, it could increase the cost. But we'll certainly look at it.
All right. And my last comment on page 22, where you talk about the various preventative treatments and so forth, and the cost grid. I don't see, unless I'm missing it, Kelly. Where's crack sealing?
Page 22?
Well, I know, 24, I'm sorry. On 22 and 23, you've got the preventative services. And then I'm trying to equate each of those over to the grid on 24.
The crack sealing component is located in our service maintenance areas. And so we do the crack sealing in-house.
Are you cutting that back, though?
No, because the crack seal program, whether we're doing it in terms of prep or without prep work, it's a program that needs to be done. Actually, it was added a couple of years ago by the council. So streets still need to have crack sealing, even if you're not going to slurry a micro. So there's plenty of streets out there that need crack sealing.
Are we continuing that?
Yes, sir.
All right. Maybe I misread. I thought it was one of the things that you were trimming back, and then I didn't see a cost.
No.
Okay. And last thing on the items that are cut back, is it possible for you to give us, and I'm going to call it kind of a weighted opinion, and maybe not right now, of, you know, if the good fairy brought you some street money, where you would put it? Because I agree with the comments that were made earlier. I mean, this is like a Fram commercial. I mean, we're going to pay now, we're going to pay later. The question is, how much more is it going to cost us later, and do we have the money now? So if it's not an unfair question, I'd like to see, you know, if you gave me another $250,000 or you gave me a half or you gave me $1 million, kind of like where you as the person responsible for that, so that we don't get tied up in emotional and other political issues of where we think we want the money. Let's look at it strictly from, you know, from staff's administrative view. As a street person, this is where I think it would best serve the city. We may then change your opinion later, but at least we'll start with that.
And give some sense of what the step functions are when you're at Mr. Stinsky's request. In other words, you know, sometimes you did 250, 500, 750, a million. There's a big difference between 5 and 750. So if you kind of tell us where the step functions are in the analysis, that'd be
helpful. What do we get for our dollars?
Right. Okay.
That's it. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks, Kelly.
Thanks, sir.
With that, we are adjourned for today. Thank you very much for being with us.